I pitched this. I pitched this. I want to wrestle Shinsuke Nakamura. So he and I lived together for a brief bit in Santa Monica, California, and we're doing a tour of Japan soon. And I thought, oh, what great interpromotional thing it would be if I were to wrestle Shinsuke Nakamura. And not only that, it would be fun, it would be rewarding, and if we put it on the network, and they could put it on their New Japan World or whatever it is that they have, and then it would be a win-win for everybody.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 377 of The Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Easter Sunday, April 5th. 2015, I am the Solemn Monster. Happy Easter to all those who celebrate. Happy Passover to our Jewish friends as well. It's a big holiday weekend, so hopefully you have a chance to spend it with family. And now you get to spend part of your weekend with me. See, I'm part of your family. It's like one giant extended family that we're all part of here. Podbean has a brand new app that I think you guys should be aware of here. They announced this week the release of a new Podbean app for iPhone. I don't know if it would work for iPad, but I do know it's a new Podbean app for the iPhone. So if you have an iPhone, you can download it for free right now in the App Store, and you can stream episodes of The Sound Off through the Podbean app. So I guess in lieu of our not having our own dedicated iPhone app, you can just download the Podbean app and get The Sound Off through there. We also have our own standalone app free for Android users in the Google Play Store. We've had that now for a couple of years, so you can go on your Android device and download the official, dedicated Solid Monster Sounds Off app, and you can stream the show that way. There will be a Podbean app coming soon for Android, but right now it's just for iPhone. So if you are an iPhone user, download the app, add the Sound Off to your playlist, and now you can stream the show that way through your iPhone. I want to thank everybody who has been signing up for an Audible trial using our URL. As I say every week, it helps us out a great deal when you pop that URL into your browser. You follow through by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible service, and when you do so, you are entitled to one free audio book. And they have over 150,000 different titles for you to choose from. Lots of wrestling books, even more non-wrestling books, whether you're an avid reader or not. Audiobooks are a fun thing, especially if you're traveling, if you're, you know, at the gym, when you need something to listen to, when you're not listening to this podcast, of course. It's such a cool thing that they offer, because you can get a free audiobook, and if you don't like the service, if you don't think it's something you're going to use long term, just cancel. You've got 30 days. You can cancel your trial. You don't pay a thing, and you've got a free audiobook, and it helps the podcast out. So audibletrial.com/Solemonster. That's the URL you want to use. audibletrial.com/Solemonster. Punch that in. You have to follow through on the sign-up process or else none of this will count. And then you can cash in on your free audiobook and it helps the podcast out. So please consider doing that. Also, if you want to directly contribute to the podcast, always the easiest way to do so, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. You'll find the PayPal donate box on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more, and beyond the nickname, you can get a quick plug for your own podcast, if you have one. Just include that information when you make the donation. Shout-out to all the folks who donated this week, including Playboy, Tiago Lerero, Nash, the Gravedigger Degalado, Tori, All I Do Is Win Johansson, the Australian Ass Kicker, Anthony Patty, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Out of Control Cody Thomas, The Reflection of Perfection, Abraham Lara, Jerome, You're Going Down, Eugenio, Eitan, The Executioner Zimmet, The Prince of Punishment, John Haney, The Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra, Robert Loverboy Lopez, The Last Outlaw, Andrew Gelinas, Guilty as Charged, Mark Court, David Sold Out Solace, Deadpool, James Herrera, Damn Straight, Michael Dorsey, Marvelous, Mark Cannon, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Delta Force, Dominic Dulapre, Lord Lexington, Paul Gregory, Mop the Floor, Joe Hoare, that's his name, and Dragon Fist, Diogo Nobre. All those guys who donated to the podcast this week, Thank you very much. I very much appreciate that. Again, you could do so 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just pop on over to thesolomonster.com. And last but not least here, got to give some love to our Pro Wrestling Tee store, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. It is the full name of the podcast. A lot of you guys took advantage of our Mania Madness sale over WrestleMania week. It was a big success. Thank you very much for that. Still buying shirts even after the sale. We got almost 20 different designs up there in the store. So please consider showing some love to our store. Every time you buy a shirt, it makes us look good. What else can I say about that? We were one of the top-selling podcast stores in all of Pro Wrestling Tees last year. Our store was only up for about 3.5 months toward the tail end of last year. So I want to have an even bigger and better 2015. We've already just about outsold all the shirts we sold last year, and it's only April. So keep buying those shirts. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Ships all over the world. You can pay by credit card or PayPal, whatever is most convenient for you. I want to thank everybody who... I did this last week, but I want to thank you all again. All the kind words and the messages that you guys have sent me after my dad's accident. I mentioned last week when we were in California doing the roundtable shows that my father passed away. He was killed in a car accident, and it's, you know, look, I don't know really what else to say. I mean, there's no way to really sugarcoat it. I'm going through a tough time right now. I have moments like right now where I can take my mind off it and I'm fine. And then there are moments where I just sit here for like an hour just thinking about what happened and I'm just a wreck. You know, it's just, it's really tough. But your emails and your tweets and your messages and everything else have been really supportive. I can't thank you enough for that. So just know that even if I haven't responded directly to you because I have just been inundated with messages, it's just impossible for me to get back to everybody, at least in a timely manner. But just know that I've read it, I've seen it, and I very much appreciate your support. As far as the trip to California last week, and I had a ball. It was a lot of fun to be out there. I'm really happy that Noah, Mark, and Brian Blade, they were really pushing for me to come out there. So we had all four horsemen out there along with Webmaster Mike. We don't get to really get the whole gang together like that very often during the year. So I was happy they convinced me to come on out. Because, look, you know, even if you look at WrestleMania in a given year, and it's like, the build kind of sucks. I'm not really as excited for the show maybe as I have been in previous years. It's not just about WrestleMania. You've got a ton of different events over WrestleMania weekend, WWE and non-WWE. I mean, whatever city they descend upon for WrestleMania, that becomes Wrestling City, or Suplex City, whatever you want to call it. And everybody comes out. I get to meet a lot of you guys. I met more listeners of this podcast last weekend, starting from the NXT show on Friday night, which I hope they make an annual staple because that was one of the most fun things I did that whole weekend. From the NXT show to the Hall of Fame to Mania to Raw, everything in between, I met so many of you guys, more than I ever have in any weekend, any Mania trip I've taken before ever, all put together. And a lot of you guys were rocking Sound Off shirts. I put pictures up on Twitter and Facebook. A lot of you guys sporting Sound Off shirts at Levi's Stadium at WrestleMania. Very cool. So it was a blast to meet all of you guys. And maybe, you know, Noah suggested I do this. Maybe we will next year at some point. We'll actually try to have some sort of organized meetup maybe for Sound Off fans in town, you know, where the events are taking place. I mean, we're at the point now where it probably would make sense to do something like that, so that might be something to consider for Dallas next year. But since I've been back, I did have a chance to finally go back and watch the full pay-per-view, well, most of it, most of WrestleMania on the network with commentary. And, man, I mean, I heard from you guys, I wanted to hear it for myself, the difference between being there live and listening to it with commentary. And I got to tell you, I came out of that thing just thinking, you know, JBL was just pure garbage at WrestleMania. Like, I'm listening to him even during the Sting Triple H match. He could just be so overbearing and over the top and just doesn't know when to keep his mouth shut. And he can really take you out of the moment. And there were a lot of different moments like that during different matches at WrestleMania, including like the Sting and Triple H match where I was just like, God damn, man, like, just shut up. I mean, I just thought he was complete garbage for a good portion of that show. The Hall of Fame, too damn long. I was there live. I think they, I mean, it aired live on the network, pretty much unedited, I think. I mean, they put bleeps in there here and there, but I think you guys got to watch the full ceremony as well, so you can vouch. It's just too long. And I said that going in. I said nine people. I mean, they're putting nine people in the Hall of Fame. That is just too many. I mean, why are they putting so many in there, especially at a time when, you know, they're running out of names? It's not like they've got this giant pool of worthy Hall of Fame names and, you know, we're going to be fine. Like, they'll always find somebody to put in there, but it's like, why are you burning through names like that? You don't have to be doing that. You could have just put six people in this year and it would have been just fine. But they put so many people in and the speeches just went on and on and on. And I thought the best speeches easily were the Medusa speech. They called her Alundra Blaze, but, you know, fuck it, she's Medusa. And of all people, the Bushwhackers. And I know there was a lot of people upset about the Bushwhackers going into the Hall of Fame. How worthy are they? Again, it's the WWE Hall of Fame. How worthy are they? You know, it's a relative question. But I will say this. I mean, they were up there with Medusa, I thought, as the most entertaining speeches of the entire night. I mean, they kicked ass. So I enjoyed that. You know, the Rikishi stuff, there was some controversy coming out of the Hall of Fame because Scotty Too Hotty put a tweet up. He was very upset that Rikishi completely ignored Too Cool. Scotty and Grandmaster Sexay, Brian Christopher, were completely ignored by Rikishi in his speech. Apparently, he was so adamant that they not even be mentioned, he went as far as to request that they not even be invited to the Hall of Fame ceremony. All of this seems like it may stem from some sort of issue over an independent booking, which if that's the case, that just sounds unbelievably petty to me. If that is true, if that's why, obviously there was a reason why he left them out. If that's the reason why, I'm sorry. I mean, that's completely ridiculous. Here's the biggest reason why I have a problem with this, okay? Not knowing. I don't know for sure what the issue was. Maybe Scotty or Brian Christopher said or did something so unbelievably awful to Rikishi. I find that hard to believe how awful it could have possibly been. But you know what? He went into the Hall of Fame as Rikishi. And I talked a little bit about this even before WrestleMania. And my biggest issue, if I had any issue with him going in, if you look at the body of work over the course of his career, you could argue that, you know what, maybe on a lower level, but sure, he deserves a Hall of Fame nod. Especially more than some others, because he had a nice career for himself as the Samoan SWAT team, the Head Shrinkers. He had a couple of forgettable gimmicks like the Sultan and the Man Who Can Make a Difference, but then he really hit it big with Rikishi. And he won the Intercontinental title. They actually had him main eventing with Steve Austin and The Rock. He was part of that whole car accident angle at Survivor Series in 99. But he went into the Hall of Fame as Rikishi. There wasn't a whole lot of emphasis put on his career outside of him sticking his ass in people's faces. Well, guess what? Too Cool was as much a part of Rikishi and that whole act getting over as anything. Rikishi didn't just get over on his own by putting glasses on and dancing. It was him and Too Cool. They played an instrumental part in him getting over and having the sort of success that he had with that gimmick. Because without them, who knows if you know, they would have hit it as big. One of my all-time favorite Royal Rumble moments to this day is still the Royal Rumble in 2000. In the middle of the match, they're all in there, and all of a sudden, the Rumble comes to a halt, and they got the glasses on, and they do the whole dancing thing, and then I think he clotheslined him. But, I mean, Too Cool was as much a part of that as anything. So, that just makes it even worse, the fact that he went in as Rikishi. Absolutely, Too Cool deserved to be mentioned, at least, if not actually be there. And he just completely blew him off. And I think, again, without knowing exactly what the hell happened between them, I think that's completely fucked up. I'm with Scotty on this. And I look, you never hear a bad story about Scotty Too Hotty. You hear things about Grandmaster Sexay. He's been arrested. He's gotten into trouble. He's no angel. I've never heard anything bad about Scotty Too Hotty. So for him to go on Twitter and be upset over something like this, yeah, I feel bad. I felt bad for the guy. Because, again, you never hear a cross word about him. And you know, if I were him, I'd be upset too. Chris Jericho was also in the news. He went on a rant on his podcast about the disrespectful fans at the Hall of Fame. They were booing some people. They were chanting "What?" During some of the speeches. It wasn't as widespread of a problem as maybe it was in past years. I mean, I still think the worst example of fan behavior at the Hall of Fame ceremony, at least the ones that I've been to, and I've been to four of them now, probably was when Trish Stratus went in, which I think might have been at Madison Square Garden, actually. But I think that was the one where she was thanking her husband. And at first it was kind of funny. I think when people realized she was married, they kind of booed him and it was like, haha. But then they wouldn't stop. And it got to the point where it was actually embarrassing. And I felt so bad for her. There's just no need for that. I'm with Jericho on this. And as somebody who has attended the last 4 years of the Hall of Fame ceremony, I am completely in favor. As nice as it is to be there, I am completely in favor of reverting back to the way it used to be in the early years and making it a banquet ceremony and keeping the fans out. Okay? I am perfectly okay with that. No more big arenas, 10,000 people, 15,000 people. I know why they do it. They make money. It's all about money. That's the most important thing to them in the end. But you know what? I think that the Hall of Fame, you've got to behave in a certain way. And if it's impossible for the fans to control themselves in that setting, then you know what? The fans ought to be cut out of it. And you go back to doing it in like an auditorium or a ballroom in a hotel. That's what they did in the early years. Keep it just restricted to those in the business, you know, past and present. Maybe you have a few fans, if they're willing to pay top dollar, who can sit in the back of the room, but that would be the extent of it. I'm totally in favor of that, and I completely understand where Jericho is coming from when he went off on those people, because those people are jackasses, and I just don't think there's any need for that at a Hall of Fame ceremony. Now, speaking of the Hall of Fame, Conor the Crusher Mahalik went in as the recipient of the first Warrior Award. And it was a very emotional deal, you know, as we all, I think, expected it to be. Former WWE ring announcer Justin Roberts, who was the one to first introduce Conor to the folks at WWE, were it not for him, nobody there would have even known about Conor. He wrote a blog this week about him going into the Hall of Fame, what a nice thing it was, but how things are not always as they appear. Believe half of what you see and portions of what you hear was the title of his blog. And in it, he talked about how WWE cut him out of everything, so you would never even know that Justin Roberts had anything to do with Conor, and how they manipulated what Warrior said in his Hall of Fame speech last year, which they absolutely did. Warrior wanted an award to honor, you know, the loyal, longtime, hardworking employees in WWE for their hard work and their dedication. The people you never hear about, and instead, they spliced and diced portions of Warrior's speech together into something completely different. Because there's no publicity for them giving an award to, you know, bend over the camera operator. You know, they don't get anything out of it. So he talked about how they, you know, fired Mark Yeaton on the eve of his 30th anniversary with the company. Mark Yeaton was the longtime timekeeper. He did other things behind the scenes. It's like Howard Finkel, for example, right? Howard Finkel is the best ring announcer in WWE, maybe in wrestling history. But it's not as though that's all Howard Finkel did, even to this day. He doesn't ring announce anymore, but he does a lot of other things. Like, he used to work for the magazine, and he does other stuff behind the scenes. Mark Yeaton was the timekeeper for years and years and years. He'd even taken a few bumps along the way, but he did a lot of things behind the scenes in that company. And he looked after some of the talent on things they needed to make sure that everybody had what they needed. The eve of his 30th anniversary, they fired him, which was a completely shitty move on their part. Even Steve Austin, on his podcast, called them out on that crap. But, you know, they did it for publicity. You know, that's why they decided to take that award in a different direction. They did it for publicity. Doesn't mean it wasn't a nice gesture on their part for them to honor Conor, for example. Honor Conor. I'm sure it meant a lot to Conor's father to be up on that stage on his son's behalf. I'm happy they did it. I was one of those people who did not have an issue with them honoring Conor at the Hall of Fame. There were people who were so upset about it, and I can't understand the lack of humanity that goes into something like that. I don't know how you can have a problem with that. So I didn't have an issue with it at all. But that being said, at the very end of his blog, Justin Roberts posted a tweet. He embedded a tweet from Stephanie McMahon that she posted during WrestleMania week that said, "Philanthropy is the future of marketing. It's the way brands are going to win." Now, she was quoting, I think, one of the co-founders of Twitter. She was quoting, So, look, what I'm not even saying what's in that tweet is wrong. I mean, I work in public relations, and so I deal with that and marketing and all that kind of, and I've been to conferences where people make comments like that. They say, listen, philanthropy or this, that, or the other, this is the future. You know, times are changing, social media, this and that. So I'm not even saying that's wrong, that that's like an incorrect statement, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. It's true. It's true. More companies and more brands are using and will start using philanthropy as a way to improve their image. I mean, that's just the reality of it. But it shouldn't surprise anybody to see all of these great video packages that WWE has done in the last couple of years. We've seen more of them in the last couple of years than ever before. I mean, they would always do a video here and there showing, you know, the charity work. But I feel like in the last 2 or 3 years, we've really seen them ratchet it up. You see the videos with, you know, for example, John Cena, all of his Make-A-Wish work, which I'm sure Cena would rather they just not publicize. I really do believe that Cena is genuine when it comes to that kind of stuff, and if it were up to him, WWE would not be shoving it in people's faces, and he would keep it, you know, on the down low. I'm sure there's stuff that John Cena does now that we still don't know about. But he's front and center in all those videos, all the Make-A-Wish stuff, the stuff with Connor. You know, it's great that they do it, but they do it because it's good for their brand. This is not breaking news. They do it because it's good for their brand. That's why they do it. You know, WWE is far from the only one. I'm not singling them out. They're not the only company to do this. You just have to accept it. Or stop supporting the product if it really bothers you that much. If you're that offended by it, then don't give them your money. I mean, look, when Vince McMahon went before Congress and spoke with one of the congressional committees, he flat out admitted that the main reason they started offering paid rehab for any talent that's ever worked for them ever, who has like substance abuse issues, the only reason they did that was public relations. Those were his words, because I think he was probably under oath. He couldn't lie. He said, yeah, public relations, that's why we did it. That's why they do the things they do. You know, welcome to corporate America. That's just how it is. But at the end of the day, they made a kid with cancer feel good before he passed away. Whatever other motivations they may have had, I'm glad they did it. I'm glad they did what they did. Now, let's shift gears here and get away from this stuff. One of the biggest stories of the last few days, you guys have been asking me about this nonstop, was the voluntary departure from WWE of one of its biggest stars. Yes, I am talking about CJ Parker. CJ Parker requested and was granted his release from NXT. I shed a tear. Everyone's favorite environmentalist hippie jobber gone from WWE. You all know how so very fond I was of CJ Parker, so I'm just devastated to see him go. Actually, I won't miss him at all. But I do wish him the best of luck. The parting was said to be amicable, all good terms, the door is open for him to return at some point. Supposedly he may want to try to get himself booked in New Japan. He's got a store up already on Pro Wrestling Tees. He's now a competitor of mine. I think he actually has a shirt up already in his store. It's like, I broke Kevin Owens' nose. He's got one up on me there. I can't have a shirt in my store that says I broke Kevin Owens' nose, because I did, but he did. So CJ Parker is gone. No, WWE broke the story. I'm just kidding. They broke the story on Friday, the big news. On social media and on their website, AJ Lee has decided to retire from in-ring competition with WWE. They put a statement on their website. They say, we wish AJ the very best. They had her real name up there, April Mendez, not April Brooks. It was April Mendez. So AJ is gone from WWE. You know, I'm sad to see her go. I was an AJ Lee fan. AJ was probably, not probably, she will go down as one of the biggest female stars they've ever had. And she's way up there. Maybe, honestly, maybe only below Chyna and Sable. I don't know about Sunny, but Chyna and Sable are probably at the top of the list in whatever order you want to put them in. Elizabeth, I guess, would have to be. Yeah, I guess Elizabeth would be up there as well. But AJ is in that conversation as far as a diva that got more screen time and camera time beyond just being in women's matches. You know, AJ, I thought AJ was a good wrestler. She wasn't like the greatest female wrestler they had on the roster, but she was pretty good. But she went far beyond that. And for a period of like a year, year and a half, I mean, she was right there in the thick of things in the main event. She was with Daniel Bryan, then she was, you know, the stuff with CM Punk and Kane, and then she became the Raw General Manager. I mean, think of all the stuff that they had this woman doing. She was in a pretty prominent position in that company. She was in freaking main events every single week in main event segments on television, week after week after week. And I thought she was knocking it out of the park. She was a better promo than most of the guys are on that roster. I think AJ Lee, if anything, is underrated as far as her promo ability. She was one of the best, not just of the women, she was one of the best, period, that they had in that company. At a time when you could pick a Paul Heyman, this guy, that guy, there aren't that many people, you can count them on one hand, right now, in this company, who are truly great promos. And AJ was way up there with the best of them. So I think that she'll go down as one of the biggest female performers that they've ever had, in terms of how she was pushed and the success that she had. And I'm going to miss her, you know, because I think AJ is great. I really do. Again, I enjoyed her matches. I enjoyed her promos, which can sometimes be scathing. Let us not forget, I think it was last year, the year before, the AJ Lee pipe bomb that she dropped on the Divas division when the Bellas and all of them were in the ring. That was one of the truly great Raw moments of the year. So she's claiming that she's retired. Supposedly, she's going to be working on a book. She already has a book deal, so we know the book will be coming. Is this just a front for her to say that she's retired, ride out the rest of her contract, and then she's going to sign somewhere else to wrestle? Does she even want to wrestle anymore? I don't know. She hasn't spoken out about it. CM Punk hasn't spoken out about it, other than to send a tweet out that said, hashtag thank you, AJ. Maybe they want to start a family. I mean, did that thought ever occur to anybody? There's people out there who are just convinced, oh, she's going to TNA. I was doubled over in laughter when I heard that. There's a better chance that she goes to Lucha Underground before she goes to TNA. Take my word for it. Who's to say she wants to go anywhere else? Maybe she wants to start a family. You know, maybe she's done. I mean, she kind of did all that she probably ever set out to accomplish. You know, she won the championship a bunch of times. She, you know, had some matches and wins, actually. Last couple years, she got the win. She got the win last year at WrestleMania. She got the winning fall this year at WrestleMania. I wonder if that would have happened had the company known before that she was planning on retiring. I don't think they would have had AJ Lee tapping out Nikki Bella this year at WrestleMania had they known that in advance. So she really didn't have anything left to prove. You know, that's kind of the problem with a lot of the women, I think, is that when you win a couple of women's titles, you've kind of hit your ceiling. It's like, well, where do you go from here? It's not like WWE does a very good job of treating the women as anything special. I mean, lately they're giving them a little more time for their matches since that whole give Divas a Chance movement. I'm hoping that's the start of a trend and not just, you know, 2 weeks from now they're going to forget about it. But giving them a few more minutes in their matches doesn't mean that you're making them feel important. The women's division still is not important. It's an afterthought. So until that attitude changes, if you're somebody like AJ, or even Paige, Paige is only 21, 22 years old. She's already won like two or three Divas titles. You know, where does she go from here? What's the ceiling? What is there left for her to accomplish? She's won the championship. She won it on her first night. She's, you know, won a match now at WrestleMania, her very first WrestleMania. I'm sure she'll go on and have a great career, and she may go on to be one of the all-time greats. But where else is there for her to go? Right? They don't really put that kind of thought into the storylines with the Divas division. They're never featured in the main event. At least, like in TNA, you could say that on occasion they've featured the women in main events and they've delivered. They don't really do that in WWE. So maybe she just saw the lay of the land. And again, it's just awkward. It's awkward being in her position. I mean, with what's going on with her husband and, you know, the lawsuits and everything else. I was shocked she even came back at all. I thought for sure that when all that stuff broke and AJ was still out, supposedly with a neck injury, I said, we've seen the last of AJ Lee. Ain't no way she's coming back. And then she came back on that one episode of Raw in New Jersey, got the big hometown pop, ran out, I think, to save Paige. That led to the WrestleMania match. I was stunned. I was stunned that she came back at all. But now that we find out she's gone, is it really that shocking? Not really. I mean, how awkward must that have been for her? I even said, let's say she's out there and she gets hurt, and the doctor attending to her is Dr. Zipak over there. How weird is that going to be? You know, I mean, I just assumed that when her contract was up, that was going to be it anyway. So how much time is left on her contract before she could potentially negotiate if she wanted to go somewhere else? I have no idea. I would suspect that she's going to lay low for a while and just, you know, enjoy life. And if that's the case, then lots of luck to her, because she should do that. She should have some time to enjoy the fruits of her labor, because she also made a lot of, I think she made a lot of money on merchandise sales. So let her enjoy the fruits of her labor. Now, while I was away, they announced a whole slate of new programming coming this year to the WWE Network. And I wanted to take a moment here just to run through the different shows that are coming to the network and what they're all about, in case you missed it. One of the shows that they are planning for a debut later in the year, they just said late 2015, is an animated show called Camp WWE, which is described as a new animated short-form comedy series. So that sounds to me like another Slam City. The Slam City cartoons are literally like 2 minutes each. I hear short form, that's what I think. Showing WWE superstars and divas when they were kids at their favorite summer camp, run by Mr. McMahon. And they call it WWE's first adult comedy. And that has me very interested. How adult are they willing to go? Apparently they said that on the network some of the programming is going to be more adult-oriented. What that means remains to be seen. I would like to think they're going to go all the way with it and actually have, you know, TV-14 programming on the network, which I think they should. I think just because the company operates in a PG environment doesn't mean that all the programming on the network has to be PG. I don't see why on their own, it's basically like a premium network that they have, people have to pay for, you know, almost like an HBO. I don't see why Mattel, for example, would give a shit if they had a show that was more adult-oriented, unless they're bothered by the fact that it's a cartoon. That I could see maybe that being a problem. It's a cartoon, therefore kids would be interested in watching a cartoon, and if it's too risque, then we may hear about issues with sponsors. But first adult comedy, that's what they said. We'll see. There's a show called Swerved, which I shuddered at first because I thought You Know Who might be involved, but that's coming in May. Apparently it's just like a prank show where they play pranks on the superstars, so that's fine. They are bringing back the Diva Search this fall. Didn't really give any more information on it, but they are bringing back the Diva Search. I don't see a need for it. I think if you are a diva on the roster, especially the NXT roster, you probably are not thrilled with that news. But they're bringing it back. Jerry Springer, they're partnering with Jerry Springer to present a show called WWE Too Hot for TV, coming in April. So, well, I guess that would be this month. The series will reintroduce the WWE universe to the most outrageous stunts and cringe-inducing moments in TV history. So, basically, I guess they will be re-airing most of Raw from the past year. Live with Chris Jericho debuts this Monday with guest John Cena. Now, this is basically the same thing as what we've had before with Steve Austin doing his podcast after Raw goes off the air. They're doing the same thing this Monday night, only with Chris Jericho interviewing John Cena. I don't know if that means Steve Austin is on the outs with WWE. There's been rumors that he and, you know, Vince McMahon was angry with Austin after the last interview that he did with Triple H. He took issue with some of the questions that Austin asked, and of course the whole China thing, that blew up into a big to-do. So it's very possible there's some sort of rift between Austin and McMahon, and Chris Jericho now is the beneficiary of that. Personally, I mean, I like Jericho, but I find Austin to be a much better interviewer. I'm very impressed every time I hear Steve Austin interview somebody, and the more experience he gets at it. I don't think there's anyone better when it comes to the wrestler podcasts. I think Austin is top-notch. And what I like about Austin, I've said this before, what I like about Austin is he does something that annoys me when other people don't, which is they don't follow up. So you'll have somebody who's asking a question, and you want them so badly to follow up, and they don't follow up. They just kind of move on. Austin did do that a couple of times when he did the network thing. I don't know if that was on purpose or just he just didn't think to follow up. But when I listen to his podcast every now and then, generally he does a pretty good job with that. So I like him. I think he's the better interviewer. We'll see how Jericho does. I would much rather they continue with Austin in this role or at least rotate them out. It sounds like this is going to be a monthly thing, though. Jericho with him, it's his show. I guess they didn't like the questions that old Stone Cold was asking. You know, the questions that people actually wanted to hear answers to. There's a show called Unfiltered with Renee Young, which debuts next month. Renee Young interviews WWE superstars and other pop culture celebrities. In this short-form series, Renee's guests include Grammy Award winner Wiz Khalifa, oh joy, five-time Grammy nominee Skylar Grey, and WWE superstars Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. Now, I know Renee interviewed Rollins in, like, a coffee shop, like, a month or two ago, because she put a picture up on Instagram. So this must have been what that was for. This was taped a couple of months ago. Culture Shock with Corey Graves debuts in June. Corey Graves reveals a variety of unique venues, customs, music, food, and people as WWE's tour travels around the world, from Marvel Comic headquarters to a tattoo shop on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Graves examines the local culture with his unique perspective and style. Well, I mean, that at least sounds interesting. You know, plus it gives Corey Graves a chance to do something. The poor guy can't wrestle anymore. You got to give him something to do. So that sounds like it could be a winner. Then they have this thing called WWE The List, also coming in June. The best, the worst, the most bizarre, and interesting of everything and anything, WWE. And the description here says, if it's amazing, outrageous, sexy, or just plain fun, it just made The List. Yeah, whatever, who gives a shit? They already have a show called Countdown. I don't really see how this is going to be all that different. They're also adding episodes of the old Hulk Hogan rock and wrestling cartoon from the 80s. And NXT TakeOver, I gotta mention this, in the original press release that they put out, in the press release, it said NXT TakeOver Live airs monthly on Wednesdays. This is incorrect. The original press release had it worded as monthly. WWE has since gone back and changed the language in the press release to reflect that these specials are going to remain quarterly, which is for the better. I was very worried when I first heard that they were going monthly. Not because they're not awesome. I mean, those shows are some of the best shows all year. But I think one of the reasons they work so well is because they don't do them every single month. I mean, believe me, I'd love to get more than four of them per year, maybe do five or six. But I wouldn't do any more than that. So I am okay with them keeping it as is if the alternative is doing them every single month. But I just wanted to mention that because I'm pretty sure I brought that up on episode 376, maybe. I don't want people thinking, oh, it was just another dirt sheet rumor. No, WWE actually said it, and then they backtracked. So they are, in fact, staying quarterly. Daniel Bryan, you heard the audio. I played it at the beginning of the podcast. I played it for a reason. That was an interview he did over WrestleMania weekend. He was asked a question by somebody if there is anybody outside of WWE that he would love to work with. And he specifically named Shinsuke Nakamura, who is the Intercontinental Champion, one of the biggest stars in all of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I've said before, Bryan has said Nakamura is his favorite performer in any wrestling promotion anywhere in the world today, which is pretty high praise coming from Daniel Bryan. And so he was asked the question, he once again named Nakamura, and he even said, you heard the audio there, he pitched it. I don't know who he pitched it to. I don't think he probably pitched it directly to Vince. He probably pitched it to one of Vince's stooges, who probably isn't even a wrestling person, so what the hell would they know? And it went nowhere. But he actually pitched the idea of doing a match with Nakamura. You know, WWE is going to be on a tour of Japan coming up in July. They have at least, I think, two dates. I think July 3rd and July 4th. They're going to be in Tokyo. And so Brian's idea was, well, I'm going to be in Japan anyway, so if we can work out the scheduling, whether it's part of the WWE show, if it's part of a New Japan show, if it's just one match in fucking Budokan Hall in front of 1,500 people, however they arrange it, let's do a match. And Brian's logic is everybody benefits. They could air it on the WWE Network and or New Japan World, which is their own streaming service, and everybody wins. Now, you hear that and it's like, haha. You know, pie in the sky, of course, that's never going to happen. And of course, it is not going to happen. There is 0% chance of this happening. But the more I thought about it, Yeah, I thought to myself, what really is so preposterous about that idea? You know, Nakamura even tweeted back to Brian and basically said, hey, anytime, anywhere, I'm game. So it's not like he wouldn't love to do it. And I would think that, you know, New Japan would be open to the idea, at least. I mean, New Japan certainly works with other promotions, whereas WWE does not. That is their policy. That's been their policy now for a number of years. It wasn't always like that. WWE did used to work with other promotions. In fact, they even did an interpromotional event with a, I want to say it was called SWS, maybe, in Japan in like 1990. I don't think it's on the network, but it was a whole show. And Hulk Hogan was on it, all the different, I mean, Randy Savage had a match against one of the Japanese stars. I don't remember if it was 10, it might have been Tenryu, actually. So it's not as though WWE has not done stuff like that before. But in the last decade or so, they have kind of locked themselves away from everybody else. They're literally in their own WWE universe that they love to talk about so much, okay? They really are. They're in their own universe. They're in their own bubble. And that's just how they do their business. And look, they make a ton of money. I'm not saying what they're doing is wrong. But I think about it more and more, and I'm like, you know, there really is nothing to lose by doing something like that. You know, I mean, I was reading this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter. Jim Ross was talking, apparently over the WrestleMania weekend period, he was talking to New Japan officials about how they should broker a deal with WWE to send Okada to NXT. With the idea that he's a big, athletic guy, and so he'd make the main roster pretty quickly, he'd become a star, and then he can go back to New Japan having, you know, quote-unquote, made it in WWE, and be even bigger. Now, the idea of, oh, he's a talented guy, so he would make the main roster very quickly, I don't know about that. I mean, that sounds completely ludicrous to me, when you've got guys like Sami Zayn, who have been in frickin' developmental for 2.5 years, okay? By no means is it a guarantee that Okada would be on the main roster within 6 months. In fact, I'm almost sure he wouldn't be. He could just as easily be stuck down there for a year or 2 years. But the idea that WWE would make such a deal with the idea that this guy would go back to New Japan as a bigger star is so laughable to me. And maybe I'm just misunderstanding how Jim Ross presented this idea. I hope I am, because If that's, you know, how he was presenting it, then it's a joke. It's completely laughable to me that WWE would even listen to such an offer like that. I would rather Okada stay and do his thing in New Japan. Don't even worry about WWE. But the idea of working with New Japan on a one-time deal like this, with the Bryan match with Nakamura, that they could sell to the hardcores as a ploy for network subscriptions. And look, I'm not saying you're going to pick up 50,000 new network subscriptions. You're not. I don't know what that magic number is. Would a Brian Nakamura match promoted on the network be enough to bring in 10,000 new subscriptions? I don't know. Maybe that's a realistic number. Maybe the number is 5,000. Maybe the number is 25,000. Never underestimate the power of the hardcore fan base. You know, Jeff Jarrett did this whole promotion. He brought New Japan to pay-per-view in the U.S. for the very first time. Little, if any, advertising. The only people who would have known about that pay-per-view are people like you and me, who are on the internet, who are on social media, who read up on shit like this. And I don't think any firm numbers are in yet, but apparently it was a success. Any number at 10,000 or above in pay-per-view buys would have been considered a success. The belief is that that show did maybe closer to like 15,000 buys, and that is without any advertising, without any real promotion at all, other than those YouTube videos they were putting on their YouTube channel. That's pretty damn good. I'm telling you, don't underestimate the power of the hardcore fan base. If you give them something they want to see, they are willing to pay for it. And so I look at this and I say to myself, you know, it's not such a far-fetched idea. It's only far-fetched because WWE has had this view since the Monday Night War ended that they're the only ones who exist in their universe. They're in their own little bubble. And what I'm saying is, as much money as they're making inside that bubble, there's a few more dollars waiting for them outside the bubble if they choose to pursue it. So why not make as much money as you possibly can? You know, if the fans want it, you shouldn't ignore it simply because, well, that's not what we do. You do whatever you want to do. If you want to do it, you can do it. You have the power to do it. And if you don't want to do it, well, then it won't happen. But I would not shut the door on the idea completely. So again, I'm not sure how seriously Brian pitched the idea. I love it. I just absolutely love the idea. Obviously, I think it would be a great spectacle to watch. And you would have to have some sort of non-finish. You're not going to have Brian beat him or him beat Brian cleanly or anything like that. But why the hell not? You know what I mean? You don't even have to make a big deal about it. You don't have to run commercials for it on TV. I would. You don't even have to do that. You just put it on there, you promote it a little bit on social media, and the fans will flock to it. That's it. That's all you have to do. So, anyway. I just think it's a shame that that they don't even consider stuff like that when I think they're leaving money on the table by doing that. And again, you need to do all you can to get people to sign up for this network. Something like that every now and then, like a spontaneous thing like that. You need stuff like that. I mean, it's nice that they're announcing Camp WWE. We're going to put a cartoon on the network and we're going to have Jerry Springer too hot for TV. Like, okay, fine. Who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? This is the sort of thing that as a fan, I would actually care about and want to spend my money on. All I'm saying is, don't be so close-minded. That's all I'm saying. Raw this past Monday night was live from San Jose, California, the post-WrestleMania edition of Raw. I had the pleasure of being there live. Not a single distraction roll-up on the entire show. I think that makes 2 weeks in a row, actually. So you know it's going to be a good night when you've got no distraction roll-ups. Raw also did its best numbers since the Raw 1000 show back in July of 2012. That was the first three-hour Raw that kicked off this three-hour era that we've been stuck in. I'd say well-deserved. Unfortunately for them, this week coming up, there will be no Brock Lesnar. There is no Undertaker. There is no Sting. You know, the WrestleMania hangover will be gone. It will be cured. So I would expect those numbers to come crashing back down to earth. This was, though, the best episode of Raw in months and months and months. A great episode overall, I thought, at least the first 2 hours. The last hour kind of fell off a cliff a little bit. It's always fun to be at these shows live. You know, when Brock Lesnar's music hit at the beginning of Raw, and he walked out in his gear, dressed for a match, which is something we never see on Monday Night Raw, you know, words can't do the reaction that he got justice. He got the kind of opening show reaction that would be reserved for an Attitude Era babyface like Steve Austin or The Rock. And I'm not even joking when I say that. Take this from somebody who was at plenty of Attitude Era Raws back in the day. Okay, this is what that reminded me of. Which is why it's also a damn shame that we're not going to see Brock for a long time, because they could really use someone like him right now on TV. He is that guy. He is that guy that they've been searching for now for years. He's that special guy that if it were up to them, he'd be the top babyface, you know, or the top tweener, kind of like Austin was back in the day, who would come out at the beginning of the show every week and fight against the authority and be the ass kicker, the rebellious ass kicker that people could get behind. In a perfect world, in their world, he'd be that guy every single week that they would trot out there on TV. The problem is, well, number one, he's not going to do that schedule. But the problem is, if you start putting him on TV every week, even if he was willing to do it, he loses that specialness. You know, it wouldn't be very long before Stephanie would be dressing him down on TV the way she does everybody else. You know, you could say, well, Solomonster, what would you have to say about Austin? Austin was on television every week back in the day. Did he lose that specialness? You know what? Maybe to some extent he did, but the big difference is that the writing and the creative was a hell of a lot different back then than it is today. And the shows back then were only 2 hours and not three. So there are enough things that have changed to where, yes, he would lose a lot of that luster, I think, that he has. And I just don't trust them. I don't trust that over the course of a year, if Brock Lesnar was on television every single week on a three-hour show, that they would have enough ideas on what to do with him. And ultimately, they would fuck him up the way they do everybody else. The reason Brock has not been fucked up is because Brock doesn't allow it, because he's not around that much. So they have to maximize what they do with him with the limited dates they have him for, I don't want to say it's impossible to fuck up Brock Lesnar. I mean, it's very possible, even if he's only on TV a few times a year. But they have to be a lot more judicious in how they use him. And I'm sure Brock also, if they really presented Brock with a completely out-of-this-world shitty idea, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think Brock cares that much about the creative nonsense. He shows up, he gets paid, he does his job. But I mean, if they presented some really stupid idea for him to do, I'd like to think that Brock would put his foot down and say, yeah, I'm not doing that. And that's the difference between him and almost everybody else on that roster. So it's just a shame. It's a shame that we can't have, we can't create a whole army of guys like Brock Lesnar that we could have on television every single week. Heyman said Lesnar would be wrestling on Raw for the first time in over a decade because he was cashing in his rematch against Seth Rollins. The place went bonkers when he said that. Brock's face was showing the battle scars from the night before, bloody cuts everywhere. He had a nasty stitched-up gash on his hairline when he went into the post the night before. And this whole controversy, by the way, did he blade, did he not blade? I mean, I didn't see this GIF that supposedly was going around. I was there live, so I'm looking up at a screen, and then I came home and I watched it on the network. He went headfirst into the post, and he got busted open. I didn't see any blade job. There's no conspiracy or controversy here, you know? It's not the first time that Brock has been sent headfirst into the post and got bloodied up. I seem to recall there being a time on Raw last year, maybe, or the year before. It was probably when he was feuding with Triple H, where he got sent into the post, and he was just bleeding all over the place. I mean, Brock, when he goes in there, I don't think he kind of realizes, you know, he's a big dude, and he's very agile and very quick and very stiff and very in your face, and he takes things to the extreme. And I guess that includes going headfirst into a steel post. So there was no blade job. He got cut. It happens. There's no controversy. Can we please put this shit to bed? But yeah, he had the big gash on his head. He looked like a total badass out there. Stephanie came out, said that Rollins was not yet there. He was on his way back from New York. He had an appearance on the Today Show, so they flew him right out to New York after WrestleMania, and they flew him right back out to the West Coast the day after on the private jet. He was at the building, but they claimed he had not yet arrived. But when he did, Stephanie was sure that Rollins would be up for the challenge, and so we had the hook of an angry Brock Lesnar wrestling on Raw. I mean, it was the perfect hook. That's why they did 5 million viewers for the show on Monday night. It was the perfect hook. Who wouldn't want to stay tuned to see Brock Lesnar kick ass? Or the tease of an actual world championship match on Raw. When was the last time we saw a WWE championship match on Raw? It's been a while. It's amazing how much that means when you don't do it. I thought this was the best opening segment in years. Then we had Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler one-on-one for the Intercontinental Championship, match that many of us thought we might see at WrestleMania. This was a great match. Fans were into it every near fall. Bryan won with the knee that beat John Cena to retain his newly won championship. This was the other thing I loved about this show. Champs were not chumps. Believe it or not, for a change, champs were not chumps. Bryan and Ziggler had a great back-and-forth match. Bryan won with his move. Just like John Cena did in his U.S. title match later on in the show. Champs are champs, not chumps, for a change. The way it should be. Bad News Barrett was out there doing commentary. When the match was over, he attacked Bryan, laid him out. I believe he did the same to Ziggler as well. Or Ziggler maybe was still down. That's when Sheamus came back. We've been waiting for him to come back for a while now. He ran down. He's sporting a new haircut, a new look. He's got braids in his beard. He looks very bizarre. He came out, chased off Barrett, and when Bryan got back to his feet, nailed him with the bro kick. And that was the... put it this way. When you bro kick Daniel Bryan in the face in front of that crowd the night after WrestleMania, you have cemented yourself as a heel. So this was the official heel turn for Sheamus. And then he waited for Ziggler to get back up. He was slapping him around. He was bullying him. Ziggler tried to fight back, and then Sheamus got him and laid him out with white noise. And then the chance of "you look stupid" rained down upon Sheamus. And it's hard to argue, he did look pretty stupid. But, you know what? A new look, a fresh heel turn, that is just what this guy needed. That is exactly what he needed to breathe some life back into I would argue, one of the most stale characters on the entire roster. He has been so stale and without any sort of real direction or program now for so long. This is exactly as goofy as he looks. You know, goofy can be good in wrestling. He certainly stands out. I'm sure that if Sheamus was walking through an airport looking like that, it would turn some heads. This is exactly what he needed. He is now in the role that he should be in. The Lucha Dragons from NXT made their Raw debut teaming with the New Day against, who, by the way, are no longer wearing blue, at least not this week. They're wearing green. So I guess now they are Green Day. They took on Cesaro, Tyson Kidd, and The Ascension. This was pretty much a showcase for Kalisto, and he delivered big time. There was, you know, this was the perfect crowd to debut this guy in front of, and it paid off. Everybody in the building was doing the Lucha, Lucha chants. It's tough to get people in the crowd at Full Sail at NXT, where almost everybody is over. It's hard to get them to do the Lucha chants. For whatever reason, the Lucha Dragons are not really that over on NXT, but in front of this Raw audience, they were over big time. They were into all of Kalisto's moves. He had a few really cool spots he worked in there, especially that one spot with Cesaro where he stood up on top of Cesaro's shoulders, and then I think he took him over for a Rana. I still worry about these guys outside of the post-Mania Raw crowd and what kind of reaction they're going to get. But for one night, these guys were superstars, and that includes Sin Cara. And whoever thought we would have said that? Kalisto's going to be a big hit as a single down the road. I assume, you know, they'll have him working with Sin Cara for a while. Eventually, that team will break off, and he'll break off on his own. He'll be what Sin Cara, the original Sin Cara, was supposed to be, which is the replacement for Rey Mysterio. Poor Xavier Woods, he was on the outside cheering on the babyfaces, banging on the mat, trying to rally his team, chanting New Day, but instead the crowd chanted New Day Sucks to the beat as he banged on the mat. Xavier looked appalled by these chants. I thought they were hilarious. You know what I would have done, honestly, especially in front of this crowd? I would have let the match go on as it did, because this match was a showcase for Kalisto. I love that they gave him the big win at the end with the Salida del Sol. He got the pin. I would have done that the exact same way. But what I would have done, I would have had the New Day appalled by these chants, which they had to know were coming. I would have had the New Day turn on the Lucha Dragons when the match was over and set up a program right off the bat. The Lucha Dragons just debuted. Guess what? They have their first program with the New Day. And you set up a program between the two teams going forward. You know, we have to be headed toward a New Day heel turn. I mean, we just have to. It's going to happen. They really don't have any choice anymore. I would have just sped things up a little bit and done it on Monday night. But you know, maybe we'll get it in the next couple of weeks. We'll see. Then came the Brock Lesnar-Seth Rollins match that wasn't. Rollins did show up. They did the introductions as though this was going to be a big championship match, big championship main event here in the middle of the show. And then Rollins ducked out of the ring before the bell could even ring, and he said, you know what, I'm feeling jet lagged. I just came back cross-country. Plus, my foot kind of hurts after I curb-stomped you and Roman Reigns the night before. And Brock had this look on his face like, oh, no, you did not just say that. And Rollins said, yeah, I think, listen, you're going to get your rematch. It's just not going to be tonight. And he went to leave. Brock, I mean, what I love about Brock Lesnar is he's a big dude, okay? But people don't give him enough credit for how quick he is and how explosive he can be. Maybe not as much as he was in his younger days when he was even scarier and faster, but he's still pretty damn fast. I still remember that one episode of Raw where 3MB was in the ring and Brock came out, and then 3MB, I think, left. They were on the outside. Brock Lesnar went from inside the ring to outside the ring and then knocked the hell out of Heath Slater. It was so quick. It was like, did this guy teleport to the outside? He is scary quick for a guy his size. So he, I mean, jetted out of the ring, grabbed Rollins, threw him into the ring, actually clotheslined him, then threw him into the ring. Rollins tried to run. He grabbed Rollins for a German suplex. Rollins landed on his feet. Brock turned around, got kicked right in the side of the head, shook it off, which I think is when Rollins realized, I better get the fuck out of here. Left the ring. Brock caught him again before he can dive into the crowd. Got him up on his shoulders for an F5. And that's when J&J Security pulled off Rollins, who then escaped through the crowd. Rollins, or rather Lesnar, clotheslined both members of J&J. But Rollins got away. Fans booed. And that's when Brock Lesnar lost his shit. He took both members of J&J Security and launched them into orbit. He overturned the announce desk, apparently killing JBL and Booker T. Michael Cole had enough sense to get out of the way before he overturned the table. Unfortunately, Michael Cole was not smart enough to run away, and Lesnar grabbed him, threw him into the ring. People were going nuts at this point. The building was just shaking with glee when he put Michael Cole up on his shoulders and delivered an F5 to Michael Cole, forever immortalizing himself as a babyface. Not just for F5ing Michael Cole, but really for wiping out the entire Raw announce team. Brock Lesnar, at least to me anyway, he will forever be a babyface no matter what he does. He then grabbed a cameraman, gave him an F5, but before he did, Stephanie came out and said, "Listen, put him down. He's a civilian. He's an innocent bystander. Put him down." Well, you know what? Brock Lesnar, technically, he did listen to Stephanie. He put the guy down. He just happened to put him down with an F5. And that did not make Stephanie very happy. She indefinitely suspended Brock Lesnar and said, "Get the hell out of my building," in the most annoying, you know, like nails on a chalkboard kind of voice that Stephanie has, where you actually kind of feel sympathy for Triple H a little bit. And that was the end of Brock Lesnar, although he did pick up the cameraman one more time, gave him a second F5. I mean, this was like, seriously, this was stone cold back in his heyday. That's exactly how Brock Lesnar was booked here, and it worked. And he was the biggest superstar of the entire show. He was the biggest superstar of the entire weekend, maybe aside from The Rock and Ronda Rousey. Brock is the frickin' man. And I'm very sad now that we're not going to see him for probably for about 3 months. I would imagine, as we get closer to SummerSlam, they'll come up with some storyline explanation for Brock to come back. This was awesome. Just awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. Brock was already back on his private plane, headed home before the show was even over. So, you know, he did his job and got paid, and he went home, because that's what Brock Lesnar... It's like he said on SportsCenter when he announced that he had re-signed the new deal. He said, "I got a part-time deal for full-time money, because I can. Because I'm Brock Lesnar and you are not." That's basically what he said. And it's true. I mean, who else could get away with a deal like that? Now, let me talk a little bit about this. So, they announced that Michael Cole had suffered a cervical fracture. And there are some people who are upset because they decided to announce a cervical... Of all the fake injuries that they could have announced for Michael Cole coming out of this angle, they announced a cervical fracture, like a week after Perro Aguayo died, essentially of a cervical fracture. Okay, he fractured, I think, actually his spine in like three places, and that really is what caused his death. Is it tasteless? Yes, it is tasteless. I don't think they did that on purpose. It could have been that they just weren't thinking, but yes, of all the fake injuries to come up with coming off of that, which they never acknowledged, and they didn't have to. Okay, WWE was under no obligation to run a graphic or acknowledge the death of Perro Aguayo. He never worked for them. It would have been a nice thing for them to do, but they didn't do it. But a cervical fracture, I mean, just the notion that Michael Cole would even suffer a neck injury on that F5, of all the injuries he could have suffered, it doesn't even make sense. It doesn't even make sense to me that he would have suffered a neck injury on that move, given the way that he landed. But that's the injury they came up with. It was stupid. And I'll tell you why it's stupid. It's not just stupid because of the Perro Aguayo thing and how tone-deaf they are. How much do you want to bet that Michael Cole will be back on Raw this Monday night? They did keep him off SmackDown Friday, so that's good. But how much money do you want to bet that this guy's going to be back on television tomorrow night? I would almost guarantee you he will be back on the show. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I eat my words. Even if he's on the show wearing a neck brace, that's not good enough. Michael Cole should not be on the show this week. I would love for Michael Cole just to not be on the show at all, but give him 1 week. He should miss at least one Raw show before they bring him back in a neck brace. I mean, it's just, they do this all the time. They have somebody suffer a debilitating injury. I mean, think back to Dean Ambrose when he suffered that injury when Bray Wyatt put the chair around his neck on SmackDown. It was like a crushed trachea, which could kill you. It's a fatal injury. And I think he was back, like, the following week. And not only back, but cutting promos like nothing ever happened. And they wonder why people don't take this stuff seriously. But But I guarantee you he'll be back on Raw this week, especially since Vince McMahon was supposedly furious with Byron Saxton's performance. Poor Byron Saxton. So when the announcers were wiped out and Cole got stretchered out, another reason why he should not be on TV this week. It's not like he left on his own power. He had to be carted out of the building. They trotted Byron Saxton out there by himself. Wasn't even sitting down. They never even bothered fixing the table, which was goofy. So he's standing out there by himself, calling the action all on his own. He sounded completely lost. Okay, I don't know who was in his ear. I don't know who told him what, but he did not have a good night. In fact, he sucked. He sounded like a librarian out there. I have to think he was told to act that way and sell the shock of what had just happened with Brock, you know, annihilating all the other announcers, and he didn't just act that way on his own. I would hope he was told to act that way. You know, if he did it on his own, obviously it was a big mistake, and if he was just doing what he was told, and Vince still got angry with him, well then, he's even more senile than we all thought. I've met Byron Saxton. He seems like a nice guy. I feel bad for dumping on him. They sent Jerry Lawler out there in the middle of a match. That's how bad he was. He was drowning out there. Vince, apparently, he knew Lawler was there. Lawler wasn't even supposed to be on the show. And they called upon Lawler to go out there and try to save this poor bastard. In the middle of a match, out comes Jerry Lawler. And, you know, it didn't work. It's not like all of a sudden the announcing got so much better. So it wasn't exactly successful. He was still terrible. It's a tough spot for him because when they give you one shot like this to make a first impression and you fail, you don't usually get a second chance. You know, once you're branded a failure, you're done. You're finished. Now, I'm not saying they're going to cut him or anything. They're going to fire him. They're going to take him off SmackDown. I'm not saying that. But I doubt he ever gets another chance like that again. You know, it was especially weird to hear Saxton, because I went back and I rewatched the show to hear the commentary, and when John Cena does his open challenge, and he's waiting for the person to come out, Saxton just goes, "Here comes Rusev," and then Dean Ambrose comes out, and he's like, "Well, I guess not." it was cringeworthy. And by the way, for all you people who said Saxton was so bad, you were begging for Cole and JBL to come back, no. I would never ever go that far and say that. I would rather have silence. Silence would be better than that. Bad announcing is no remedy for worse announcing. The solution is simply no announcing at all. So please don't ever say that. Ms. Dow beat Stardust with the skull-crushing finale. So still referring to himself as Ms. Dow, still using Miz's move. Even though he split from the Miz at WrestleMania the night before. Miz came out after the match. He laid out Miz Dow with the skull-crushing finale. So there's your match for Extreme Rules. Neville made his Raw debut. Adrian Neville from NXT. Now no longer called Adrian, because we all know when Monday Night Raw is like the place where first names go to die, if you've noticed that. I actually have no problem with this because the name Adrian, I mean, I was used to calling him Adrian Neville. Adrian is not really, it's not the best name for him to be using. Just calling him Neville, give it 2 or 3 weeks, trust me, everybody will be used to it, and he'll be better off for just being called Neville. So I don't have any problem with that. He came out wearing a cape, so it looks like they met the fans halfway on the Mighty Mouse gimmick. He is wearing a cape now, but they do refer to him as the man that Gravity forgot, which was his nickname on NXT. He otherwise looks the same. Look, the guy looks like $1 million. It's just his size. His size and that accent when it comes to his promos. I'm telling you right now, it's going to work against him. You know, you hear enough stories, not even about Vince, but like Kevin Dunn and what he thinks of people that have accents. The guy is such a freaking cancer on that company. That's what I would be most worried about when it comes to Neville. It's not a matter of his physical appearance. I mean, the guy looks like $1 million. His working ability is second to none. His finishing move, he's got the finishing move that just wows you when he does it. He was in there against Curtis Axel. He busted out the Red Arrow. You know, when I went back and watched it on TV, you could see in the front row there were people with their mouths wide open. You know, their jaws drop at the sight of that move. It's just such a a spectacular thing. But you know what? Evan Bourne was another guy who also had a spectacular-looking finish. That alone is not enough to guarantee you success. They're going to have to get behind this guy and look beyond the ears and look beyond the Jordy accent and really give this guy a chance. And, you know, I'm just not confident they're going to do that. But on this night, in front of this crowd, he was over like Rover. People were into him, and I thought he looked great. They actually showed the Red Arrow in super slow motion on the replay, which was awesome. I have to give an honorable mention, though, to Curtis Axel on his pre-match promo, where he mentioned Extreme Rules as the pay-per-view coming up. I popped for that. John Cena had an open challenge. Anybody who wanted to come out and challenge him for the United States Championship, that was accepted by Dean Ambrose. They had a really fun match that saw Ambrose kick out of an attitude adjustment, Cena kicked out of the Dirty Deeds. Finally, in the end, John Cena got the win with another AA. Poor Ambrose, another big match that he loses. But I didn't expect John Cena to get the U.S. title and drop it the night after. You've got to look more long-term with this. So I didn't really have a problem with it. It was pretty much the outcome I expected. And you know what? We got a great match out of it. Ambrose grudgingly shook hands with Cena after the match was over. He seemed very upset with himself over the loss. I've read where they have commissioned new artwork for the United States title, so it looks like John Cena is going to be holding on to this thing for a while. Hopefully it doesn't spin. That's my only request. I don't want the spinner to be brought back. I'm telling you, though, they can build to a unification match with Bryan at SummerSlam. That's the way to go. You give these titles a solid 6 months of legitimacy on both of those guys, then have Bryan unify them, and he can drop it to a mid-level guy who they actually have big plans for, and they won't bury, like they did with Rusev. Rusev was already, he already had the undefeated streak going for him, but Rusev they kept strong, and they need to get that unified title onto somebody else who needs it, and book them strong. That's how you do this, and hopefully that's the route that they go. Unless, now there are other options here. That's not the only option. I like that option the most. But you can have an NXT guy that they want to debut. Have him debut by having him accept Cena's open challenge 1 week. You know, maybe a month or two down the road if they keep doing this gimmick every week. Like a Sami Zayn or a Finn Balor. Full entrance and everything. He comes out. I mean, what a moment that would be. Or, who knows, maybe a certain Samoan comes out to accept the challenge. And I'm not talking about Roman Reigns. So there's different ideas you can go with here. I still think the unification idea is the way to go, because you're not keeping these titles on Bryan and Cena for longer than 6 months. You're going to need another big match for SummerSlam. You'll have Brock in the main event probably challenging for the title, but I think Cena-Bryan for both belts would be a big co-main event that you could promote for that show. AJ Lee, the now departed AJ Lee, well, she's not dead, but, you know, she's gone from the company, that is, not from life. I'm stumbling over my words here now. Paige and Naomi beat the Bella Twins and Natalya. 13 minutes, 7 seconds was the time on the Diva stopwatch when Naomi pinned Nikki, which I would imagine sets her up now as the number one contender for the title at Extreme Rules. They gave this match a lot of time, which was nice to see. I was very proud of the crowd in San Jose when they started with the dipshit CM Punk chants directed at AJ Lee, and they were very quickly drowned out in favor of AJ Lee chants. You know, if there's one positive to AJ retiring, it's that we won't have to hear the Punk chants anymore. What are the idiots going to do now? What retired superstar will they chant for now? Maybe Tyson Tomko, maybe. Or Luther Reigns, Roman's brother, since they hate Roman so much. No sooner was I feeling proud of San Jose, though, before they started chanting some other things that made me completely ashamed to be in the same building. This was the low point of the night. They started a chant of "You Suck, Cena," directed at Nikki Bella. Then when they got bored with that, they moved on to "You Suck, Bryan," directed at Brie. "You Suck, Uso," directed at Naomi. And "You Suck, Tyson," directed at Natalya. How original. What an original chant. You know? You say you want to give Divas a chance. These women are out there 10, 12, 13 minutes. They're having a pretty good match. And That's what you chant. That's what you chant? You chant shit like that, really? I didn't find the humor in it. And I'm pretty cool with most of the crowd chants, even some of the dumber ones. You know, save for the punk ones and the We Are Awesome chants. We Are Awesome is one of the absolute dirt worst chants. It's like, just shut up. You know what I mean? Just shut up. Aside from those, I'm usually pretty cool with the chants, and I just didn't find the humor in this. I thought it was actually pretty stupid. We had Rusev out there. He beat Goldust, pretty much just a squash match. I'm sure they're building to Rusev Cena in yet another match at Extreme Rules. No Lana. I don't know if she was back filming her movie or if they are, in fact, split up now coming out of WrestleMania. I hope not, but she was not there. And then came the main event. Randy Orton, Ryback, and the mystery man, Roman Reigns. They beat Seth Rollins, Kane, and The Big Show when Roman Reigns pinned Kane with a spear after Kane was RKO'd. It was so goofy, too, because Randy Orton nailed Kane with an RKO, but he had to get back up for the spear. So he nailed him with an RKO, which lays out everybody else, right? One of the biggest finishers on the entire roster. And Kane just gets right back up. It was like, it was so stupid. And look, I will admit, anytime they do that, it's dumb, including back in the glory days of the Attitude Era, because there were plenty of times, including one time I can remember in particular, where Stone Cold gave Rock a stunner. I want to say it was actually in their Backlash match in 99, the month after WrestleMania. And he gave Rock a stunner, and Rock just popped right back up because Austin, the final spot was going to be Austin hitting him in the head with the title belt. So Rock just popped right back up, got hit in the head with the belt, then he got pinned. Even the Royal Rumble, you know, the Royal Rumble when Austin eliminated Rock that year, would have been 98, I guess, right? That final spot. What's the famous final spot of that Royal Rumble? He gave Rock a stunner, Rock popped right back up so that Austin can throw him out. I always thought spots like that were so goofy, and it looked goofy here too. When Roman Reigns came out as the mystery partner, we knew Ryback was going to be with Orton because Ryback had gone to Orton in a backstage segment and said, listen, I'm your man. But they never announced who the third man would be. Anybody with half a brain could tell it was going to be Roman Reigns. We were all hoping it was going to be somebody else. We were all hoping that they would have a surprise up their sleeve, something creative, something different, and unfortunately, they did not. When Reigns came out, the crowd just died. I mean, they were booing, they were angry. It was like, ugh, that was the reaction. They did not want to see that. I would have kept Roman off the show completely. If that's all they had planned for this guy, if he wasn't going to come out the night after and cut a promo, and all, which was probably a bad idea anyway, I would have just kept him off the entire show. And I would have kept him the hell away from this crowd because you knew the reaction this guy was going to get. You knew it wasn't going to be good. So why even put him out there if you don't have to? Now, some of you may laugh at this, but you know, this was a special show. They had a red-hot crowd. I can think of two other scenarios that would have been much better than what they did here. First, and this is not the one I would have gone with, actually, but I do like this idea, and I would have gone with this idea over what they did. First, you debut a couple of NXT guys as Orton's partners. Orton, for whatever reason, Orton can't find a partner. Maybe Ryback is taken out. Roman Reigns is taken at whatever, okay? He can't find a partner. Now you really don't know. Is it going to be a handicap match? Is he going to be able to find somebody? And you have two NXT guys that come out who are looking to make a name for themselves. They're willing to step up and partner with Randy Orton here against the Authority. And the two names that, you know, come to my mind would be Neville and Balor. Now, you could do, I suppose, Hideo Itami and Finn Balor. But I probably would have just saved Adrian Neville's debut without the cape for this match and had him show up as a surprise and then have Finn Balor doing his whole entrance show up as the third man. And, you know, I guarantee you the reaction would have been, I mean, they would have blown the roof off the place. And it would have given those two guys a huge rub in their debut right out of the gate, you know, tagging with somebody like Randy Orton. I would have saved, you know, like I said, Neville for that spot, have Balor out there, Demon and all, and you get him on the main roster where he belongs. That would have been the ideal scenario, I think, if you're looking at it from more of a long-term perspective, okay? We have two young guys, we want to build them. How do we build them? This is how they make an impact on day one. Or, Or the other idea, which I just think would have been cool, and just to do it as a special thing, I would have done it. Because, like I said, it would have been fucking cool to see. And by the way, you know, what happened to those days? What happened to the days of just sometimes saying, fuck it, let's do something fun and cool that people aren't expecting on this show? Why not have The Undertaker be one of Orton's partners and Sting be the other? Why not? Give me one good reason why not. Sting already came to Orton's aid a few weeks ago before WrestleMania, right? So that's not much of a stretch. It'd be a hell of a lot better than what they did with him when Raw went off the air. I could tell you that. And Undertaker, if you're asking, well, why? What sense would that make for The Undertaker to show up? Why doesn't it make sense? Orton had a scramble for a partner. He needed help. He got the dead man. The way I look at it, so long as Kane is involved, it makes perfect sense. He wants to kick his brother's ass. His brother is a corporate kiss ass, so sure, I'll help you, Randy. There it is. There's your explanation. You don't need any explanation beyond that. Why'd you do Undertaker Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania? Why was Bray Wyatt suddenly calling out the dead man, you know, a guy who had lost the year before? Why? Because that's the match they wanted to do. Did it make a lot of sense? Not really. But, you know, you want an explanation? There's your explanation. So, to me, that's not an excuse. And in case you forgot, by the way, Undertaker wrestled a six-man tag match on Raw in England a couple of years ago. He teamed up with Kane and Daniel Bryan against The Shield. So it would not be impossible to see Undertaker wrestling on Raw. I mean, the guy had a freaking singles match the night after that on SmackDown against Dean Ambrose. On SmackDown. SmackDown, people. SmackDown. Okay, think about that. Just one match. That's all you got to do. One match. He could do it. The idea of Undertaker, Orton, and Sting as a team for one night would have been huge. And then, after the finish, after the babyfaces win, you tease a little stare down between Taker and Sting as a way to foreshadow a match between them in Texas at WrestleMania next year. And that's how you go off the air. You can't tell me that would not have been better than what they did. All due respect to Ryback, who I do like, this show deserved something much bigger than what they gave us for the main event. Sting was already there. Just suit him up and let him wrestle one match on Raw. It's a six-man tag. Who cares? He could wrestle one friggin' match. It's not the end of the world. It beats the hell out of keeping him off Raw and instead trotting him out there on the network in full regalia to cut a promo that basically said, I have absolutely no idea what WWE is going to do with me, but hey, I'll be here. That's basically what he said. And then you send Bo fucking Dallas out for comedy. They thought comedy with Sting is what the people wanted to see. No. What the people want to see is Sting in there with the big stars because they know he doesn't have very many matches left. He's on borrowed time. But instead, they sent Roman Reigns out there to die a death for the second night in a row, by the way. So we ended up with Chance of Please Retire, directed at the Big Show. Chance of NXT, which Randy Orton did not seem amused by in the slightest. They brought back The Wave, which the camera actually focused on. And no, Noah Mark did not start at this time. I guarantee you, the crowd would not have shit on that main event had they gone with either of those two ideas that I just proposed. It would have been just the opposite. It would have, you know what it would have been like? It would have been like the 10-man tag, one of my favorite matches all time on Raw. They did a 10-man tag on Raw in Dallas in like February of 2000. That's one of my favorite Raw matches of all time. You can find it on YouTube. It was Rock, Cactus Jack, Rikishi, and Too Cool against Triple H, X-Pac, Benoit, Malenko, and Saturn. Yeah, it was Malenko and Saturn because Eddie Guerrero had injured his elbow. He was on the outside. I mean, holy God, go back and watch that match. That crowd. That match was so much fun because the fans were going totally apeshit for everything in that match. It would have been that type of atmosphere had they done either of the matches that I just pitched. It's all about knowing your audience and what the audience wants to see. They were doing so well on Monday night with that show. It was such a great show. And then they gave us The Big Show and Kane in the main event. And you add in Roman Reigns, who the people did not want to see, and there was no saving it. And you know what? They should have known that. But I don't want to make it sound like I'm shitting on the entire show, because I'm not. I thought Raw was awesome. I just think the finish left a lot to be desired. But overall, they hit a home run. I thought it was a great show. Can they carry that momentum over into this week again with all without the big names on there like Brock Lesnar and that kind of thing? We'll see. I guess we'll see. But for 1 week anyway, Raw kicked ass. Now, interestingly enough, that was our last night in California. So when the show was over, you know, it takes some getting used to being out on the West Coast. I'm not used to it. Raw ended. It was only 8 o'clock at night, so we had plenty of time to go out and, you know, kind of just have some fun before I flew home the next morning. And we ended up at a bar with a lot of wrestling fans. And who should be in the bar but former Raw GM, and yes, still WWE superstar, he is still under contract, Brad Maddox. Brad Maddox is just hanging out by himself. I didn't see him with anybody. He's just sitting there by himself. People would randomly go up to him and get pictures. I got a picture with him. Seemed like a really cool guy. But very odd. Just kind of hanging out, you know, taking it all in, I guess. And then he got suckered by all of us into doing some karaoke. I have the video up on my Facebook profile page. If you missed it, scroll back a few days and you'll see it. It's a short clip. Brad Maddox doing karaoke to One Direction. It was the song What Makes You Beautiful. That was not the way I expected my WrestleMania week to end. Partaking in karaoke to a One Direction song with Brad Maddox at a bar. But stranger things have happened. Lots of rumors going around that NXT might soon be running an event at the Manhattan Center in New York City. I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer. I pitched this idea months ago on the podcast before they even started touring outside of Florida. That building would be perfect for an NXT show, especially if they wait a couple of months until after Samoa Joe debuts, if he goes to NXT first. I mean, they'll sell that building out in no time. Sami Zayn returned at the beginning of NXT this week, cut a promo in the ring, talked about how he was able to wrestle recently in Abu Dhabi in front of his people and what a thrill that was, but all he could think about was Kevin Owens. He said he plans to get his rematch very soon and to kick Kevin Owens' ass. It was short, to the point. I liked it. Rhino killed the dude, who was never named, with a gore. They used him to they used Rhino to put over Baron Corbin at the San Jose NXT show that I attended, so maybe that's the direction they end up going in here. Corbin is still a babyface on television, so maybe he goes heel first, and then they use Rhino to help get him over. I'm sure he'll be putting over Sami Zayn at some point, since they had a backstage confrontation later in the show where Rhino told him to get in line if he wanted a shot at the championship. Apparently, Rhino does not understand that if you are a former champion, you are entitled to a rematch. People have not explained this rule to Rhino yet, so he just thinks it's the Wild West, I guess. That's kind of the law of the land here. You got to get in line. Somebody needs to explain to him how this works. Emma is clearly doing the slow burn to a heel turn. She would not even do the little use the ropes to pull myself up bit when she did her entrance. Bayley and Emma had a match. Bayley won with a roll-up. I thought Emma would attack her afterwards. She had this look on her face like she was just incredulous. She couldn't believe it. But she just stood there looking like she was going out of her mind, never attacked Bayley. It's coming, though. It is coming. And when it does, hopefully people start to take this woman more seriously because she deserves better than this. Becky Lynch cut a promo backstage saying that she wants a shot at the NXT Championship. Everyone else, even Alexa Bliss, has gotten a shot at the women's title. Well, she's right. She's right about that. Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy beat the Lucha Dragons with their running vertical suplex into a frog splash combo. Power and Glory, they did it better. Superplex off the ropes, followed by the immediate splash off the top. Still one of the best tag team finishes I've ever seen. So Blake and Murphy had some work to do before I could put them in the same category as Hercules and Paul Roma, one of the all-time great underrated teams in WWE history, at least as far as makeshift teams go. In a battle of the former tag team partners, Jason Jordan beat Ty Dillinger with a T-bone suplex. I said when they broke up all those weeks ago, and I'll say it again here, the next round of NXT cuts, whenever they happen, if I'm Ty Dillinger, I'm not answering my phone. Remember what JTG said. He never should have answered his phone. Although, I guess Dillinger, it's a little bit different here, because Dillinger, being at the performance center every day, that probably wouldn't work. Maybe he can hide in a utility closet or something for a few days. Main event was a 2 out of 3 falls match between hated rivals, Tyler Breeze and Hideo Itami, Mr. WrestleMania himself. Itami quickly won the first fall with a kick to the face. Breeze then recovered and nailed the beauty shot for the second fall. Why even do a 2 out of 3 falls match if you're just going to blow off the first 2 falls in the first 3 minutes? I mean, what's the point? I mean, to me, it sort of defeats the whole purpose of even doing a match like this. So we were left with a 1-on-1 singles match anyway. At the end, Itami missed his diving corner drop kick. Breeze then missed the beauty shot, and Itami nailed the drop kick. But Breeze followed up by nailing the beauty shot and, shockingly, got the pin. I was stunned. I was stunned when the referee counted 3. Now, we've seen Tyler Breeze beat Itami once before in a match, and that surprised me as well. This came off to me like maybe the blow-off, you know, the big 2 out of 3 falls blow-off of this feud. And I was just stunned. I was stunned they gave the win to Breeze. I thought for sure Itami was winning this. I was actually really happy after that feeling of shock wore off, because they're keeping Tyler Breeze strong and they're not just jobbing him out to the more experienced guys. Tyler Breeze is fucking awesome. And the entire world needs to know that. So I, you know, when they put him over in situations like this, I have absolutely no problem with it at all. I'm happy for the guy. He deserves it. And I hope it's on to bigger and better things for him. I'm just happy they haven't, you know, shuffled him to the back of the line and kind of cast him off as some kind of comedy character, because he's more than that. He's more than a comedy character. People could have said the same thing about Shawn Michaels when he was first coming up, doing the whole thing where he would look at himself in the mirror. Sherry would hold the mirror. Okay, but he had enough talent. He was good enough where over time, he became a bigger star. They gave him the opportunity. He took advantage of it. I would like to see them do the same thing with Tyler Breeze. But these guys are just a pleasure to watch in the ring. I've seen all of their matches. They're all at least good, if not great. They opened the show in San Jose, WrestleMania weekend. They were the opening match. That match was not as good as this one. But that match was highlighted by the GTS. I was so happy, by the way, that I got that GTS on video when he nailed it in San Jose. You've never seen a crowd so happy to see somebody hit their finish. That video I posted got retweeted like almost 500 times. That tells you something right there as far as the level of interest that people had in seeing him hit that move. This week's show coming up on Wednesday is a highlight show with footage from the WrestleMania Access Tournament that Itami won, which then earned him a spot in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania. So I don't think they're airing all of those matches in full. My guess is they're going to show highlights from the tournament matches that took place at Fan Access, and then they have a camera that kind of followed Itami around as he got his big WrestleMania experience. He had a very forgettable stint in the Battle Royal, unfortunately. But that's what the entire show is this week. It's not a new first-run episode. It's essentially a highlight show, so if you want to skip it, I know some of you guys don't like watching shows like that. It sucks that we're not getting a new episode of NXT this week. I'll tune in. I'm curious to see some of these WrestleMania highlights that they have. But yeah, you should be aware that there is no new first-run episode. I guess there will be one next week. So hopefully Lucha Underground or even Impact can fill the void, because if Raw slides back into typical Raw mode, to what we've come to expect from Raw most weeks, unfortunately, and without any NXT, I'm going to need something next week to look forward to. Lucha Underground's always a winner. Impact, you know, let's just go right into Impact here, because Impact was another really good show this week. I did not get to see TNA the week before. I was not around, and I just didn't have a chance with everything that's been going on with me to go back and watch it. I don't think anything particularly important happened. I know it was their first show back at Universal Studios in Orlando, so I got to see the new set for the first time this week. Yeah, it looks fine. You know, obviously, the shows in the UK came off a lot better because they had a much bigger, louder crowd, and a lot of the fans they get at Universal Studios are not necessarily wrestling fans. They're tourists who are there to just see the show, and they don't necessarily even have any knowledge of who these guys are or what the current storylines are. So that hurts the show. But I thought overall the show was actually very good. Now, before we get into that, in the latest Observer newsletter, Destination America, it's becoming very obvious, is beginning to exert its influence over TNA in more ways than one. They were not thrilled with the string of UK Impact tapings because, and this is so foolish, the reason they weren't happy with the string of Impact tapings, not that they thought that they were bad shows, but the idea that they were filming from the UK is because it's Destination America, not Destination UK. Even though those shows made the product come off as hot at a time when it has absolutely no buzz going for it, but they seem to be more upset about the fact that, hey, this is America. These shows have to take place in America, not overseas. Freedom fries! I don't know what was going through their heads, but to me that just comes off as so idiotic. And Destination America also apparently the ones behind the decision to make Kurt Angle the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion because they like the idea of having an Olympic gold medalist as their champion. And so it begins. But you know what? Without this deal, without this TV deal, let's be honest, TNA, they'd be dead. They wouldn't exist anymore. So if the network wants certain things, it's in TNA's best interest to make them happy. This week it was Bell to Bell Night on Impact. That was what they called the show, Bell to Bell. Not even sure what that means. They also had these really kind of weird-looking illustrations. Instead of having like the usual match graphic to preview the matches that were coming up, they had somebody, I guess, who drew illustrations of all the guys. Not a big deal. I guess it was kind of different, but I don't know. It's kind of weird. There weren't that many matches on the show, but the ones they did have were actually very long. I mean, they had multiple matches that went close to, if not 20 minutes, which is something you won't find, for example, on 3 hours of Raw, but you definitely had that on Impact this week. Also, they had tons of ads throughout the entire show for their Best of Sting DVD. What a loser. Guy hasn't won a singles match on TV since beating Bully Ray in a no DQ match in August of 2013. I had to go look it up. The last time Sting won a singles match anywhere for any promotion on television, it was in August of 2013. That's over a year and a half ago. What a loser. See, now, had he wrestled on TV this week, well, I guess it would have been a six-man tag had they gone with my idea, but he would have won. Anyway, Eric Young beat Bobby Roode in a submission match with the figure four leg lock. Story of the match was EY torturing Roode by going after his injured left knee. This looks to be the blow-off for their feud. I hope so. I'm so done with this. I mean, they had a really good match. It was long, too, like 15, 16 minutes. I just can't get into this. I really just can't get into it. I'm done. I'm so done with Bobby Roode and Eric Young. Please, for the love of God, let them move on to something else. EY went over, which surprised me, although I guess with Kurt Angle as the champion, it makes sense that they would want to build him up as a viable challenger for the title. That's the only reason I could see why you would put him over Bobby Roode, unless Bobby Roode's going heel, in which case it doesn't matter if he loses. Actually, you know what? Bobby Roode, he should go heel. I like Bobby Roode as a heel. As a babyface, he's kind of boring. I still like him, but I liked him much better as a heel, so I'd be okay with that. We got an interview from the Wolves. Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. Eddie Edwards, of course, suffered the broken heel in a match that was taped many weeks ago. They were doing one of their one-night-only pay-per-view tapings. It was actually a singles match between Richards and Edwards. When Edwards landed wrong, he fractured his heel, and so he was on crutches here. His foot was in a boot. He talked about how, unfortunately, he must surrender the tag team championship. He won't be able to partner with Davey Richards. Actually, it almost sounded like he was giving Richards an in to maybe find a different partner, and Richards was like, listen, you know, us Wolves stick together, and if my brother can't go, then I'm not going with anybody else, so we're going to give up the tag team titles. He put one title on each turnbuckle, and I actually thought Davey Richards cut a pretty good promo here, and that's the end of the Wolves for now, I guess. It's a little odd, because they're doing more tapings at the beginning of May. So they're not taping television again until May, okay? Now, to my knowledge, Davey Richards, or rather I should say Eddie Edwards, is going to be okay. He'll be ready to probably be back in action by then. So realistically, he's only going to be off television the way the tapings are being done here. He's only going to be off TV for a few weeks. It's not like he's going to be out until June or August or something like that. So they really didn't have to take the titles away from them, but maybe they have a storyline idea for that, maybe. I don't know. But I would not expect Eddie Edwards to be out of action that much longer, maybe only like another month or so, and then he should be okay to come back. We had Gail Kim beating Angelina Love with Eat Defeat. Magnus and Bram, Falls Count Anywhere match. This has been a very personal rivalry. These guys were like brothers, and of course Bram turned on Magnus, and Magnus's fiance Mickie James was brought into this whole thing, and it's culminated now in this Falls Count Anywhere match, which also came off as a blow-off for their feud. This thing went almost 20 minutes, much like the Eric Young-Bobby Roode match earlier in the show. Mickie James did run down midway through the match to be at ringside, even though Magnus told her not to come down. Apparently, these women never listen. When Bram was threatening her at one point, because of course she ended up being put in a position where she was in trouble, she should have listened to her fiancé. James Storm, of all people, ran down to protect her, which seems to maybe set up Magnus's next program, because after the match was over, Magnus did get the win. He did vanquish Bram, and he left with his fiance. But when the match was over in the back, he confronted James Storm backstage and said, "Hey, dude, what the hell was that all about?" And Storm just said, "Hey, I was just helping out an old friend." And he walked off. So obviously something is going to happen there between them. And the main event was Kurt Angle and Bobby Lashley in a rematch for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. Angle beat Lashley a couple of weeks ago to win the title in an excellent match. And the rematch was every bit as good as their first match. So if you have not seen either one of these matches, if you are not one to watch TNA or watch them anymore, I would go back and I would look on YouTube and find any of these Kurt Angle-Bobby Lashley matches. Before their first match a couple of weeks ago, they had never had a match before. That was their very first match. They knocked it out of the park. I think they knocked it out of the park again this time. Like I said, great match. Not without controversy. Angle got the win with a roll-up. Clearly, Lashley's shoulder, his left shoulder, was up. Referee didn't see it. Counted the pin anyway. Kurt Angle wins. But this is not the end of the feud. I assume that will be a disputed finish, which they did point out on the replay. So it is going somewhere. And that somewhere is likely a third match at some point between the two of them for the championship. And that was Impact. Overall, very good show. Dead promotion, but very good show. Lucha Underground, very much not dead. Lucha Underground has a pulse, unlike TNA. There is a lot of buzz around Lucha Underground, and a lot of speculation about their future. We are still in the midst of their very first season. They have it kind of broken up into seasons. We are still in season one of Lucha Underground, and they have been, I believe they've been renewed. So there will be a season two. Now they have four more taping dates, April 11th, 12th, 18th and 19th. That will take them through August for the end of that first season. And at that point, they're going to start to air reruns and they're going to shut down for a little while. How long, I don't know, but they have been renewed for a second season. We just may have to go a couple of months without any new Lucha Underground on television, which sucks. Hopefully they start that thing back up pretty quickly. They also had a beautiful tribute that's worth mentioning to the late Perro Aguayo. That they posted on the El Rey Network YouTube channel. Look it up. It's about 5 minutes long. It's excellent. It's depressing and very sad, but it's just excellent. It's just a classy tribute to their friend, even though he never wrestled for Lucha Underground. A lot of the talent in Lucha Underground comes from the AAA promotion. They were very close to or have in the past worked with Perro Aguayo Jr. and were very familiar with him, and you could tell they're very broken up about it. In particular, it looked like Sexy Star and Phoenix were having a lot of trouble holding it together. Vampiro had some nice words. Conan had some nice words. Somebody else who I wasn't sure who it was. I don't think they identified him. But very, very much worth going out of your way to take a look at that tribute. We had Big Rick, Killshot, and his cousin, The Mac, make their appearance at the beginning of the show in Dario Cueto's office. The Mac, by the way, better known as Willie Mac, who signed a WWE developmental deal last year, I think went through all the medical tests and passed them all, and then before he was to report to Florida, he got cut. And I still, to this day, do not know why. I don't know what the hell happened. Obviously, something got flagged, or I mean, maybe he did something or said something. I have no idea. It's kind of a mystery. But, yeah, he was supposed to be at NXT, and he never did make his way there. So, you know, WWE's loss is Lucha Underground's gain. He is now with them. He is called the Mac. They were in Dario Cueto's office. He announced that there would be a Trios tournament to crown new Trios tag team champions. And so he put them in the tournament. Johnny Mundo beat Angelico. Great match. This was such a fun match. There was a spot in this match where Angelico did a coast-to-coast razor's edge on Johnny Mundo. He launched him into the turnbuckles. It was just... I mean, I know Seth Rollins has the buckle bomb where he'll pick you up for a powerbomb run and throw you into the corner. This was pretty much just like that, but just with more ferocity. I would never in a million years agree to take a move like that. And you know what? Johnny Mundo, that's the kind of move that you take that shortens your career. There's been a lot of neck injuries in wrestling, and so you take moves like that, you're not going to be wrestling for very long. So that was a brutal spot, but a great match. Mundo won in the end with Starship Pain. He got the win. Black Lotus, they had a video with Black Lotus where she kind of recapped everything that's happened with her. She hasn't been on TV for a few weeks, but they recapped everything that has happened with her up to this point. She said that the luchador who had rescued her all those weeks ago from that car trunk is named El Dragon Azteca. He is going to train her to kill Dario Cueto's caged monster. That monster he's keeping in a cage somewhere in the temple. She wants to kill that monster and avenge the death of her parents. This had kind of a Kill Bill vibe to it. All due respect to Angela Fong, she's no Uma Thurman. Backstage, Johnny Mundo is confronted by Alberto El Patron in the bathroom. Johnny asks him, hey, are you there just to face people that you've already beaten? Or are you actually interested in some real competition? And Alberto, who came off as just a total heel in this segment, he kind of laughed. He said, you know, I had forgotten all about you, Johnny Mundo. I thought you were off doing non-wrestling stuff these days. And Johnny Mundo called himself the face of the company. And Alberto said, I know. And he walked off. I love these pre-tape segments that they do. I mean, Lucha Underground is better at these backstage segments than any other promotion in or out of America, bar none. They are the absolute best. They're just so awesome. Back in Dario Cueto's office, we got like three of these backstage pre-tape package segments in a row. We were back in Dario Cueto's office now. He was meeting with Sexy Star, who never spoke, although she was playing with a tape dispenser on his desk. I'm not sure what the symbolism there was, or maybe there was no symbolism, and she just decided to play with his tape dispenser, which is not a euphemism for something more dirty, by the way. He told her that he would be pairing her off with Superfly and Pentagon Jr. as a team in the Trios tournament against Big Rick and his crew. Drago beat Aerostar. This was match 4 of their best of 5 series, with the winner getting a unique opportunity that has yet to be defined by Dario Cueto. We still don't know what that unique opportunity is. I have a feeling, you know, you got two baby faces here with a heel authority figure. I don't know if I'd feel too comfortable about this unique opportunity that they have coming to them. Drago needed a win here, being down 2-1 in the series, and he got one. He won with the cradle. Not the best match between these two. It looked edited. Even though it was edited, there were still moves that looked kind of botched. It looked a little choppy. It was still good, but their other matches were much better. Next match between them now becomes a winner-take-all, now that we're all knotted up at 2 wins apiece. Back again in Dario Cueto's office, we see Angelico, Ivelisse, and Son of Havoc sitting together, begrudgingly, as Cueto informs them that they have not had a lot of success recently here in Lucha Underground. And so next week, they will be forced to team with one another in the Trios tournament. And this did not make any of them very happy, least of which Ivelisse. Main event time, Big Rick, Killshot, and the Mac against Sexy Star, Superfly, and my favorite wrestler in all of Lucha Underground, and my second favorite wrestler in the world right now behind Brock Lesnar, that being Pentagon Jr. Pentagon gets on the mic before the match to talk to his master, whoever this master is, wherever he is, and says that even though I've been dealt two shitty partners, I will win this tournament and the titles for you, all by myself. And there was a spot late in the match where Killshot, he got crotched up on the top rope. I think he got crotched. Anyway, he's sitting up on the top rope. Pentagon, I think, then he like may have chopped his chest, whatever he did. But Pentagon is in the ring. And Sexy Star comes in the ring. And now she's standing in the corner opposite where Killshot and Pentagon are. And it looks like she's getting ready to run and do something. So she comes running out of the corner. And this was so awesome. Pentagon Jr. grabs her, throws her over his head, basically throws her into the air. She lands perfectly on Killshot's shoulders and takes him over for a Hurricane Rana. My words here cannot do this justice. It sounds like such a simple spot, but to watch it in execution and how, I mean, Pentagon just propelled her just enough, and she just landed perfectly. It was so awesome, just perfectly executed. Superfly then immediately followed up with a frog splash, but Big Rick broke up the count. I thought for sure the match was over, but he broke up the count. And then Willie Mack hit a brainbuster on Superfly, followed by a double foot stomp off the top rope by Killshot for the pin. So Big Rick and his crew get the win. They move on. Pentagon then tried to break Superfly's arm for being a loser and losing the match for them, but Sexy Star made the save, and that's how we went off the air. So another fine installment of Lucha Underground, which continues to fire on all cylinders. I am still having a blast watching the show week after week. One quick note on Jeff Jarrett and his Global Force Wrestling promotion. He put a press release out announcing their first TV tapings in Las Vegas. Their first three shows are going to be at the Orleans Arena. Takes place on Friday, July 24th. They have another taping on August 21st, also a Friday, and Friday, October 23rd. That's all we know. We still don't know who the wrestlers are going to be, if he's bringing in talent from all these different promotions, if they're going to have their own talent on their own roster under contract. They're still keeping a lot of that information very close to the vest. Still no information, even though these are TV tapings, on what TV outlet the show may air on. Supposedly they're in negotiations with three different cable stations. What they are, nobody knows. So still very secretive what's going on with GFW, but at least they've announced the TV taping. So in these next few months, we expect to have more answers, because they're going to have, obviously there's going to have to be some kind of roster in place for these shows when they go to tape them. Let's get into the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. You can also send in, if you would like, MP3 audio questions. Try to keep them to about 30 seconds or so, give or take. And still, please include the text of your question with your name and city or state, country, whatever, in the body of the email. Kevin, from Barbados. I'm sure you already know about AJ Lee retiring. Basically, there's a big gaping hole in the women's division now, meaning they could push Naomi as AJ's next successor, overpush the Bellas even more, or bring up an NXT talent to fill that void. Now, I know a lot of people will say Charlotte, but I'm not so sure. I know they're going to constantly bring up the fact that she's Ric Flair's daughter, but I think that's putting her on too big of a pedestal, with a lot of casual fans not knowing about her on NXT. If it were up to you, how would you debut Charlotte on the main roster, as opposed to that debacle they did with her and Natalya months ago? I think more people know about Charlotte than you think. Not everybody does, but I do think a decent number of people know, you know, at least that she's Ric Flair's daughter. She is clearly coming to the main roster soon. They don't have her featured in that new Tap Out clothing commercial for no reason. She's the only NXT performer in that commercial. They have Dolph Ziggler, they have Roman Reigns, and they have Charlotte. There's a reason she's in that commercial. So she's going to be on TV very soon. She's coming up. How would I do it? It's very simple. Have the Bella Twins call her out. You want to make Charlotte coming up a big deal? Then you need to have the Divas Champion calling her out. You know, maybe after she runs through Naomi, who I'm assuming is going to be her next challenger, and maybe somebody else, maybe Paige. She says, you know, look, I've run through everybody on the Divas roster. I ran AJ Lee out of the company, and I'm bored. Plus, you know, she's sick and tired of hearing about NXT, and hearing about Charlotte, Ric Flair's daughter, and how She's the future of the Divas division. So she calls her out from NXT. Then you give it a week or two, maybe, before she actually shows up on television. In the meantime, you can air a video package to educate the fans who don't know who she is. And you air that on Raw. And then she shows up, and boom, you have a program right off the bat. That is, if you want Charlotte in that spot. You could do the exact same thing, but do it with Sasha Banks instead. Since, you know, Sasha Banks is, after all, the woman who beat Charlotte. She is the current NXT champion. The champion calls out the champion. You could do it that way, too. Sasha and Charlotte both need to come up to the main roster right now to fill that void. They both deserve to be on that main roster. They are more than capable of taking AJ Lee's spot. They don't have the star power that AJ had, but they're both better wrestlers than AJ, and I think in time, they'll become bigger stars than her. But they belong on the main roster now. So that's what I would do with Charlotte, but you could just as easily do that with Sasha Banks. Pablo from Vancouver, Canada, I just wanted to ask what your thought would be if Daniel Bryan was in the main event of this year's WrestleMania and the outcome was still the same. I'd have no problem with it. You know, Rollins, look, Rollins deserved it. As long as we got a solid 15-minute, 20-minute match with Bryan and Brock out there doing their thing before the cash-in, I'm completely fine with it. I wouldn't want it to be as one-sided as the match was with Roman Reigns, where Bryan just takes abuse and takes abuse and takes abuse and isn't really given the chance to fire up and do much. I'd prefer it be more like the Lesnar-Punk match at SummerSlam a few years ago, which was a little more even. But you wouldn't have had the boos. It would have been a more pure babyface versus heel dynamic. It wouldn't have been so lopsided with Bryan in there. And then you do the Rollins cash-in mid-match to shock everybody. I would have been perfectly fine with that. David from Sacramento, California. Among all the new content coming to the WWE Network, one left me feeling insulted. The return of the Diva Search. With the rise of NXT becoming more than just a developmental territory and more of a brand all unto itself, do you look at the Divas Search as a slap in the face toward the women of NXT? After all, the winner of a popularity contest gets a main roster spot despite being greener than Eva Marie. And we all know that means about 5 Diva Search rejects will end up going to NXT. I'm sure the women at NXT probably are not thrilled about it. I don't think any of the women probably on the main roster or the NXT roster are thrilled at the idea of somebody being gifted a spot, you know, in the Diva Search. I don't really care for the Diva Search personally. It's a Kevin Dunn thing, surprise, surprise. But, you know, I don't know. We did get women like Layla and Maria and Eve Torres out of the Diva Search. And Michelle McCool, for any Michelle McCool fans out there, I know Undertaker is. So it's not as though it was a complete waste. I still can't believe they let Maria go. I mean, that woman is unbelievable. It's not even just that she's hot. She obviously is hot, but she's got a good mind for wrestling. Like, she gets it, you know what I mean? So whatever that bullshit is that went down and why they got rid of her, I just think that was a big mistake. And Eve Torres got so good there by the end, she was one of the better Divas champions that they've had in the last decade. I mean, Eve was really, really good. Candice Michelle is another one. I was never really a Candice Michelle fan on any level. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, she wasn't hot. Honestly, she had a very plastic look to me. I really didn't find her that attractive. I didn't think as a performer she was any great shakes. I just wasn't a fan. But, you know, I will give her a lot of credit. She did improve. She put the work in, she busted her ass, and she got better as time went on. So it's not really that I feel insulted. I just don't see the need for it, especially when they have, you know, they're cultivating all of this female talent down in NXT. But if I were a woman on the roster there, I wouldn't be too thrilled about it. Don from Melbourne, Australia. Now with Seth Rollins as WWE champion, I think he will be champion until SummerSlam, when he hopefully drops it back to Brock. There are 4 pay-per-views until then, and it seems his first challenger will be Randy Orton at Extreme Rules. That leaves 3 more pay-per-views, and I was wondering who you think he will face. I could also see him facing Cena once to finish off their feud and give Rollins some credibility. Also, do you think we could see one of the guys in the Intercontinental title picture, like Bryan Ziggler or Ambrose, be promoted to main event status on a B-level show like Payback or Battleground? I don't see John Cena being fed to Seth Rollins, especially as long as Cena's doing the U.S. title thing, so I don't think that's going to happen. You know what I would do? By the way, you mentioned, until Brock gets the belt back. I don't see Brock getting the belt back. I just don't think it's happening. I think Brock had his run. They don't want the title back on him, essentially being held hostage for months on end. So I don't think Brock's getting the belt back, at least not this year. Just my belief. But you know what I would do? You mentioned the Intercontinental level guys, and I talked in the Raw review about how Dean Ambrose came out, got a mega reaction, had a great match with John Cena, and lost. As he has quite a bit recently, Dean Ambrose was on the losing end. And when that match with Cena was over, he was very distraught. He was very upset with himself for losing. You know, he's in kind of a weird spot right now. I would be okay with building Dean Ambrose as a challenger for Seth Rollins. I would love to do it at SummerSlam. It would almost be like a full circle kind of thing. They had that lumberjack match last year at SummerSlam that Rollins won. I know Brock's probably going to get the shot at SummerSlam because he's not coming back on like a B-level show. But I would love for it to be a SummerSlam or maybe even the month after or something to do Ambrose and Rollins for the championship and let Ambrose win. Let Ambrose beat Seth Rollins and become WWE World Heavyweight Champion and give him a little run. Now, I mean, do you swap the belt right back on Rollins and they kind of go back and forth with it for a few months like Austin Rock back in the day or Rock Triple H? I mean, you could do that. Or you could give Ambrose a few months with the belt before he drops it to whoever. But I don't think anybody would bat an eyelash if Dean Ambrose won the title. I think he's more than ready. In the fans' eyes, they want to get behind the guy. They want a reason to get behind the guy. He's been losing and losing and losing and losing and losing. And at some point, there's got to be a breaking point where either he flips the fuck out and turns heel, which I still think is where the real money is in him long term. You know, babyface Rollins, heel Ambrose. You could do that, but I really think that people are waiting. You know, they're chomping at the bit for this guy to get that big win. He never got his revenge on Seth Rollins, thanks to Bray Wyatt sticking his nose in there. That thing was kind of left open-ended. And he never really did get that redemption over Rollins that he was looking for Rollins being the one to split the Shield up. So the story is there. The story makes absolute sense. I like that idea. I like Ambrose, not Lesnar, being the one later this year to beat Rollins and win the championship, even if it is just for, you know, a couple of months. I like that idea. And I would find it hilarious, you know, after winning the Royal Rumble this year, and then people thinking it was a foregone conclusion that he was beating Brock and winning the belt at WrestleMania, it would be hilarious to me if it ends up that Roman Reigns is the last of the three Shield members to win the championship when it looked like, and a lot of people thought, he'd be number one. He'd be the first. And he very well could end up being the last. He'll get the belt at some point, but maybe not until, you know, Mania next year. So Ambrose winning the title in the meantime, I wouldn't have an issue with that at all. In fact, that's probably how I would book it. This comes from Kyle. Why does WWE never acknowledge Ken Shamrock? Back during the Monday Night War thing on the network, they never brought him in for an interview, nor have they really ever acknowledged him hardly at all. It's not as though he did nothing. He was the referee for the famous Austin Brett match at WrestleMania 13, held the Intercontinental title at the height of its prominence. Well, let's not get carried away here. He feuded with The Rock, was involved in the Undertaker kidnapping Stephanie McMahon angle, so why do they act like he never existed? Was there some sort of falling out? I don't know for sure. My belief is it has to do with comments that he's made about Triple H. He's made a lot of really nasty comments about Triple H over the years. And Triple H, I'm sure, has a way of not forgetting. And Triple H has a lot of power and a lot of influence. And so that's my best guess. I don't know for sure. But if I had to venture a guess, it's not like Ken Shamrock has kept his nose clean and his mouth shut and he hasn't said anything bad, because I don't think leaving the company there were any issues. It's not like there was this big rift when he left the company in 2000. But I think comments that he has made about Triple H, or maybe the company in general since then, have not done him any favors, and I think that has probably more to do with it than anything else. Mateo from Massachusetts. WWE wants to break records and do huge business at WrestleMania 32, so what do you think of inducting Vince McMahon, Eric Bischoff, and Paul Heyman into the WWE Hall of Fame, and then also inducting Undertaker, Sting, and Rob Van Dam to have it be like WWE, WCW, and ECW. Maybe even go further and put in Jim Johnston, Mike Tenay, and Joey Styles. What are your thoughts? Wow. I just got done talking about how nine people is far too many in the Hall of Fame, and you just named nine people. So, no. Absolutely not. It's not happening anyway, because Vince McMahon doesn't want to go into the Hall of Fame until after he's dead. I mean, he doesn't even like it when people name-drop him during the ceremony. He gets very bent out of shape about it. It was a miracle he even showed up to do the induction for Steve Austin all those years ago. So it's not going to happen. But if you wanted to do Vince, Bischoff, and Heyman, here's how I would do it. You do the three of them, and then the Warrior Award goes to whoever it goes to, and that's it. That's your Hall of Fame class. You build it around those three, give them plenty of time for their speeches, especially Heyman, and you dedicate the Warrior Award to whoever deserves it, and that's your Hall of Fame class. There is no need to add anybody else. You build it around those three. You know, but then the problem with that, I guess, is that you have no actual wrestlers going in that year, which, you know what, is perfectly fine. I mean, there have been years, wasn't it like this year or last year or something, where the way the system works with the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, like, nobody got elected. So they actually had, like, a Hall of Fame ceremony with no new inductees going in because nobody met the threshold that was needed to qualify for an induction. I mean, it's okay if you skip a year, you have a Hall of Fame class that actually has no wrestlers. I mean, nobody's going to complain about the idea of Vince McMahon, the greatest promoter of all time, Eric Bischoff, who certainly left his mark on the business, and Paul Heyman, great promoter, even better performer. Nobody can have an issue with those three going in. And if you want to make it special and do it all in one year, I think that's a fine Hall of Fame class. And you skip a year because you're running out of names. So skipping a year might not be the worst idea in the world when it comes to not inducting any new wrestlers. It's not the worst idea in the world. But you are not going to be putting any wrestlers in if you do that, which means it won't be as marketable. Which for them, that's all they're interested in. That's all the Hall of Fame is to them. It's a marketing tool. But then again, I'm also in favor, as I said earlier, of ditching the big arenas for the old banquet halls and ballrooms and just cutting the crowd out completely, which means you're not going to make any money off tickets. That's what I'd be in favor of anyway, but they're just not going to do that. And lastly here, Philip asks, what would you say is your favorite theme song for Raw, SmackDown, or any other wrestling show? He says, my favorite theme was the one from 2002 to 2006. I think it might have been called Across the Nation. What is yours? I hated that song. I grew just to hate that song, that whole period of Raw. Ugh, one of the worst. As far as my favorite, you know what? I was a big fan of the Saturday Night's Main Event theme, the original, which was actually a real song, which was Obsession by Animotion. Love that song. Love that song for Saturday Night's Main Event, especially. But even the second song that they used, which was, I think, their own creation. It was some instrumental theme. I love that music. I love it. I think those two songs, the first two themes for Saturday Night's Main Event, are probably my favorite. As far as Monday Night Raw, if I had to pick a Raw theme, I'd probably go with the original from 1993. But you know what? People are going to hate on me for this. I say fuck the haters. You know what one of my favorite Raw themes was? It was the Nickelback theme. You know, Burn It to the Ground. I don't know what the issue that people have is with Nickelback. I mean, I don't have a problem with them. I actually like some of their music. And I thought that was one of the better Raw themes that we've ever had. A hell of a lot better than that Across the Nation bullshit. Oh, I'll take fucking Nickelback over that any day of the week. So, that's just going to piss a whole bunch of people off, but I don't care. And then we have this week's sad tweet, which a lot of you pointed out to me on Twitter. So please, I continue to encourage you, if you have a suggestion for sad tweet, you can tweet me at Solomonster or email me and let me know, and maybe I'll use your suggestion on the show as I am doing this week. Some of you pointed out a tweet to me that was sent last night by Alex Riley, at Alex Riley WWE, who said, I just got 4-3-15 tattooed on my neck. Clearly, a knock at AJ Lee, who got a tattoo on the back of her neck a couple of years ago with the date of her first Divas title win, which she was mocked for at the time for being a mark. But for Alex Riley to be mocking someone, really, dude? Here's the thing that I don't understand. Working for such a petty company, we know how petty WWE can be when it comes to somebody speaking out of turn or making a comment on social media that blows up and becomes, you know, a black eye for them or a big controversy. You would think that this guy would know better than to tweet something that could potentially get him into trouble. You'd think he would have learned his lesson after he allegedly mouthed off backstage to John Cena and he ended up stuck in purgatory for years as a result. You would think he would learn his lesson. Or maybe I'm just reading too much into it. And he got popped for DUI again, and he simply wanted to commemorate the date. Maybe that's it. Alex Riley wins for this week's sad tweet. You can follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster is the handle. We are also all over Facebook. I have a profile page. We have a fan page that you can like. We have a private discussion group that you have to apply for membership for, and I will approve you, maybe. We do have a long queue of people waiting to get into the group. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. I'm hoping to get some new fresh content up there very soon. I did post episode 376, which is the WrestleMania 31 review episode. That is up there in full on YouTube if you want to stream it that way. And even if you listen to it, you know, give it a view, give it a thumbs up, comment, like it. Of course, subscribe to the channel, so that way when new videos go up, you will be notified of that. Keep supporting the podcast, too. You can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. You can use our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself a free audiobook, and we get a little something on the back end there, so it helps the podcast out when you sign up and do that. You can also buy a shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. We have the show now streaming in the Podbean app. Podbean, brand new app for iPhone users. So head over to the App Store, download the Podbean app, and you can stream the sound off that way in light of us not having our own dedicated iPhone app. But we do have our own dedicated Android app. Go to the Google Play Store. It is free. You can download it, and you can stream sound off episodes right there on your Google Android device. You are always connected. When it comes to the sound up, you can subscribe in iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio. Please keep streaming us on there. We're now part of the Audio Boom Network. We have our own page. You go to audioboom.com and sign up. We're on there as well. Stream us in the Audio Boom app if you're a mobile device. There is no excuse for you not to tune into this podcast every single week. If one method doesn't work, I guarantee you there are three others that do. You are always plugged in. I always try to take care of you guys and make sure you've got some way to listen to the podcast. So please support us in all of those different ways. We will be back next weekend with a brand new episode, 378. Again, thank you all for the kind messages and the outpouring of support. It's a tough time for me, but you guys help make it a lot easier. So I thank you for that. And until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here for a brand new episode next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Whatever happened to real men on this show? Can you imagine, in any other era of WWE, dressing down your top star the way that Stephanie McMahon did to John Cena on Monday night? They've done this with Cena. They've done this with Bryan. They've done it with Dolph. They've done it with Ryback. They did it with Rollins. Remember the infamous episode where Big Show was on his knees in the middle of the ring crying for his job? Tears are just streaming down this guy's face. This guy's 7 feet tall, 450 pounds. He's in the ring crying. He's a giant. Yeah, he's a giant pussy.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.